Hey, let's start the show.
It's August 8th, 2013. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Smith. After a brief technical delay, we are back. Sitting to my left is Norma Chan.
Hello.
Hi, Norm. How are you doing?
Hello.
You're holding,
doing all right.
Holding a tablet?
I am holding a observant Nexus 7.
Okay. Sitting to your left, making his triumphant return after, it seems like a really long time, but I don't think it's been that long.
Several weeks.
I think we were in months at this point, but Gary Whitta, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
You're wearing your Paulo Hermanos shirt.
Yes.
Because the premiere is on Sunday.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
And this is Breaking Bad, of course. I have still not seen the show.
You've not watched Breaking Bad?
Nope. It's kind of wow,
too busy.
It's all on Netflix.
I know it's on Netflix. I'll catch up before this the new season, the last season is over. But I remember that you told us about Breaking Bad. You were super excited. Do you remember this? It was when we were waiting outside in line at Stonestown for the iPhone 4. Not 4S. The iPhone 4.
Was that
4.
The one that Gary and I got up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and went just drove down there and got
That's
it?
All of them, isn't it?
No,
that was pretty much all of them. But it was,
I thought the last one we stayed out
the
at
the 4,
like midnight.
I think I ended up getting shipped.
You
and
got
I got it like a day early.
You did get it. Because you had the Retina, remember?
I came just to gloat.
You had the Retina.
Yeah.
I had friends who stayed overnight, and then I think we went like 4 or 5 a.m., and you came and you got the Starbucks coffee cart and everything.
Mm.
But I remember that's when you came up, and this is 2010, I guess now.
Yeah, it was like June of 2010, probably,
and
maybe July.
You said there's a show I'm watching, and it's called Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
and how have they done five seasons in 3 years?
Well, no,
I was already catching up at that point. It had already been out for a couple of years.
Since then, it has become the culture. It's the
well, yeah.
Man,
I mean, the amazing thing is, as good
phenomenon.
As the show was back then, it's now double the show it was at that point. I mean, it's
and you were like back then. I guess it was season two. You're like, I can't imagine how much more craziness that the show can have.
And no matter what my imagination of that may have been, the actual show has surpassed that and then some.
So that's a show that I like. When I'm watching it, I really love it. But it's such a specific, weird kind of tension that I have a really hard time watching it. Like, I never sit down and I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to watch a good man go horribly, horribly bad, awfully bad. What, you know, just
but if that's
the
what
fall
you want to watch,
the downfall of a good man is a hard thing for me to watch.
Yes. Like, it's amazing to watch over the course of, you know, the five seasons, though.
Well, it's interesting because it calls into the thing that makes me uncomfortable is that it calls into effect the thin veneer that separates civilized from, you know, the complete anarchy of Walter White.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about television as opposed to a movie where you have to kind of shoehorn everything into 2 hours. You get to tell a story over the course of 5 years, and you get to see that transformation from, you know, as the creator said, from Mr. Chips to Scarface. And it happens so gradually that you almost don't notice it happen. You wake up one morning and he's that guy.
Always be Bryan Cranston will always be the dad from Malcolm in the Middle.
Not after you've watched this.
Well, so,
although people have made the joke that at the end of Breaking Bad he goes into witness protection and that's the beginning of Malcolm in the Middle.
That'd be a good.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Although how he would go into witness protection, I don't know. Like, who else would they be? Pretty much. It would be other people going into witness protection so they could get him.
Well, all right. We're bordering on spoiler territory.
So what have you been doing, man? What have you been up to?
I've just been working and traveling a lot and having a 1-year-old.
Yeah, that's a real handful, it turns out.
It will eat up a lot of your bandwidth.
Yeah, yeah. Any work stuff you can talk about? Just secret projects that will come to light in the future or not?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that weird space where there's a lot going on, but there's nothing I can talk about. But hopefully soon.
Okay, people ask.
The only reason
I ask is because people ask.
I've had a little bit of downtime, like between projects recently, to work on some of my own stuff. So I have a novel that I'm very slowly kind of chipping away at whenever I have free time. So I made some progress with that. What else? I mean, like just even on leisure time, you know, like I've got a ridiculous backlog of DVDs and games and stuff at home that I need to start getting through. My real worry is that once the next gen stuff comes through, actually the deadline that I'm really working towards is, so we're 8 days away from Saints Row 4.
Yeah.
And not long after that is going to be GTA 5.
Yeah.
Those clearly are games that need to be played immediately.
You want to experience them as part of the zeitgeist.
So I need to clear whatever backlog I have between now and then.
I have friends who played Saints Row 4 already, and they say it is everything.
Oh, I'm so excited. It is my most anticipated game of the year, more so than GTA 5, which I really am excited for.
Yeah. I everybody I've talked to about it that's played it has said it is all of your worries that it was just warmed over DLC or whatever because of the kind of quick turn are completely unfounded.
No, it looks like a fully realized game. And it seems like, even though this doesn't seem possible, it would be fun, I think, to go back and play Saints Row 1 and go back to the beginning when the game wasn't about what it is now. It was actually more of a straight up. Yeah. It was less straight up than GTA, but it was clearly just going after that GTA market. And then it got slightly sillier in Saints Row 2.
Yeah.
And in Saints Row 3, they just went off a cliff.
Completely off
the rails. Into just the Looney Tunes, which is really where I think where the series found its identity.
Right. My fear
and so
for
now
Saints
they've
Row
just 4. Doubled down on that in Saints Row 4. It seems like as big a leap into even greater stupidity.
Well, it's like the superhero thing and the fact that a lot of it's happening inside what's essentially the Matrix. Those two things combined make anything – the dumbest things imaginable possible.
But since we're doing an alien invasion,
you're the president of the United States.
Yeah, why not?
Just every, you know, you've got superpowers.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of said this with Saints Row 3. I think like their design mantra was just like, what would just be the most fun? And who cares about any other consideration? Like realism, believability, whatever. Let's just do whatever we want to make people grin insanely. And that they achieved that immense. I mean, Saints Row 3 was my game of the year, tied with Portal 2 years ago. It's that good. And so I'm equally excited.
It feels
about
like the game that Duke Nukem should have been.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Duke Nukem was trying to chart that territory.
Duke Nukem.
They just never really nailed the tone, humor.
It was never clever enough to be that.
No.
I went back and started playing. I got so excited about Saints Row 4 a few weeks ago that I went back and fired up the third one again.
I did as well.
And just have. Like I just last night got through the part where you do all the bad part where you do all the side missions where it introduces the different side missions and started unlocking new characters.
Yes.
Is so sublimely dumb and wonderful. And I had never realized that there's an Adult Swim station. Like one of the radio stations is an Adult Swim station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the WBCG or whatever it is, CBWG.
Right.
It's worth listening
just
to.
Just the craziness of it.
It's real good.
It's so unapologetically ridiculous.
Super, super dumb.
And, you know, the stuff that they've added this time, you know, the alien, the various weapons, the dubstep, alien abduction gun, anal probe, all the things that...
I don't know how I feel about the dubstep gun. I think the dubstep joke reached its climax and went over the rails.
But that, to me, is part of the fun of it.
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, it's out next week, right?
I'm pre-ordering it on Steam. I'm going to be playing it on my... I played Saints Row 3 on the PC, which I really enjoyed because, you know, you get the 1080p super frame rate experience, and it's a superior experience to consoles.
It's 2 weeks from now. It's not next week.
It's 8 days away.
No, it's the 20th.
Today's
the 8th.
Right. So, okay, so 12 days away.
14.
I was thinking today's the 8th, and that's why I got confused.
Okay.
So I'm excited about that. And then Saints Row, and then GTA, I think, is like a month behind that.
Yeah, but I'm going to wait for the PC on that.
So we get a solid month of Saints Row before GTA. You got to wait for the PC?
I'm going to wait for the PC on GTA.
Yeah, but you could be waiting years.
I'm fine with that. I'm not a huge GTA fan.
No, I have to get in. This, to me, is like the last swan song of this generation.
This is
it. We're going to go out with a bang.
Cross generation?
No, they'll do...
I wish it were. I would rather wait another couple of months and have these
Wait for the fucking PC version. That's waiting for the next generation.
Yeah, but I'm saying I'd rather wait another couple of months, not years, like you often have to do with the PC version of Rockstar.
There's
still no PC
good.
Version of Red Dead Redemption.
That's never going to happen. But there was the PC version of L.A. Noire and the PC version of GTA 4 both followed relatively quickly.
Yes, they all did eventually come out, but I'm not willing to wait.
Well.
I like the idea of ending this generation on a big bang. I'm also kind of, sort of, maybe like halfway looking at Dragon's Crown.
Because I don't know what Dragon's Crown is.
Dragon's Crown is a Golden Axe style sideways scrolling multiplayer hack and slash game. Hmm. You remember Golden Axe, right?
Yeah, like a kind of 2.5D.
Yes.
Kind of.
I love those games, and Dragon's Crown has been getting very good reviews.
Huh.
There's another game which just came out this week on Xbox 360 as part of Summer of Arcade.
The Brothers thing.
Brothers.
Yeah.
Which everyone is raving about, and I want to pick that up as well.
I didn't even hear anything about Summer of Arcade this year. It seems like they kind of just... Poof!
Remember when Summer Arcade was like the biggest thing?
Yeah, Limbo, Braid, Super
Meat
Boy.
That seems to have gone off the boil. This is the first year where Summer of Arcade nobody seemed to care.
Well, the thing,
but Brothers, despite that, has just through the Twitter sphere or whatever, like a lot of people out there are just going crazy about it.
I feel like maybe a lot of people, since those games aren't going to be backwards compatible, have kind of said, okay, well, I'm not going to put $15 into this machine that I'm going to unplug.
Like I said, I definitely have senioritis now for the end of this generation. And the game has to be pretty exceptional for me to play it this close to the end of the generation, because I know all these games are going to get put away and never played again.
Yeah,
I'm not going to keep my legacy systems around, and there's no back compatibility. But Saints Row 4, GTA 5 obviously are exemptions to that.
Well, and they're on the PC, so they'll continue. You'll continue being able to play them indefinitely. Except for
GTA 5. And I haven't even started on my Steam backlog. I still haven't played Last of Us.
Yeah, you made a bad mistake there.
I'm going to start on that tonight, though. Either that or Brothers.
Just play the first 15 minutes of Last of Us, and you'll know immediately whether you want to keep going.
I'm sure I will want to keep going.
It's pretty amazing.
But I've got so much stuff on Steam. That Steam sale, you know what that's like.
What'd you get?
Yeah.
I can't remember who did the webcomic, but there's a cartoon of the guy going like, oh, Steam sale, like, I'll just keep buying stuff. How bad can it get? And the next frame is like him living in a cardboard box.
Yeah. With a whole shitload of Steam games.
I picked up Thomas Was Alone.
That's a brilliant game.
For $2.50.
You should send that guy money because that game is so good.
I'm looking forward to playing it.
You haven't played? Oh, it's like 3 hours.
You'll play with the controller?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Okay. All right,
I play that in my living room.
That's how I want to play.
You can play it on your Mac.
I'm kind of thinking about finally getting into Skyrim, which has been sitting there since it came out.
It's too late. You missed the window on that.
Why?
The conversation's over. It's too much.
Why does it need to be a conversation, though? Can I just enjoy it?
If you're looking at deadline by the end of the holiday rush, it's too late.
The problem is,
is like 100 hours.
Yeah.
You're not going to do it. You're not going
to
make it.
I'm never going to play, am I? Because there's never going to be enough time for me to feel like I can devote to it.
Maybe
some other game.
Hey, look at it this way. Maybe if you get really horribly injured and have to take a few months off work, it'll be there for you.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's something to look forward to.
What else? Surgeon Simulator I picked up.
That game is, you will have fun with it for 5 minutes and then it's co-op.
Yeah, it is co-op. I didn't know it was going to be co-op.
It's co-op.
And that's part of the fun, but like, I need to watch a YouTube video of somebody who actually knows how to play it because it's one of those things where I refuse to believe do any of the operations.
You can't.
But people do.
No,
and the best thing is watching real doctors play it.
Yeah.
Well, Dan Stapleton's wife is a real doctor, right? And she's was just absolutely horrified by
appalled.
It. Why are you smashing that man's ribs with a ball peen hammer? That's what surgery is.
I want to say, I saw a stream somebody linked me when I asked about it on Twitter of two of the thumbs playing that.
Yeah.
And I
want to watch someone who actually can play it. See what that scenario looks like.
I don't think people can actually. I don't know if anybody can actually play, but it's pretty good.
Oh, there are people who can do brain surgery in 30
really?
Seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
30-second brain surgery.
There are always these people.
Swipe left, swipe right.
Are they using
just swap the brain in?
It's weird. Because the thing is, we should explain why it's difficult. The thing that's weird about it is each finger is controlled with a different key on the keyboard.
If you've played Quap, it's basically that.
Except for you have mouse controls too.
Right. But the level of dexterity and coordination that you need to perform even the most basic functions, let alone surgery, internal surgery.
You know, you can unlock the TF2 medic too.
Oh.
So you can play as him doing the heart replacement on the
and you're doing like brain surgery in the back of an ambulance with the doors flailing open.
It's physics gone horribly
wrong. So I picked up that. I picked up Prison Architect, which sounds like
that's
fun.
Pretty good.
It's very much
movie?
I might wait for it to come a little bit further along.
I would wait.
That's not that show. Prison Break, right? The game.
No, it's like theme architect. Park, but it's a prison.
Yeah, it's basically like
Rollercoaster Tycoon or whatever.
There've been a series of bad prison building games over the years, but this one is actually, like, from what I've seen of it, it's promising.
A prison building game.
Seems fun.
There's a bunch of other indie games that look really good. Spelunky looks good. Gone Home is coming
out today.
Soon. That looks really good.
I've been playing a lot of Rogue Legacy lately. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's
Rogue Legacy is another one. I was watching some of Patrick Klepek's experiences on that. That looks like a lot of fun.
Oh my god, it's so good.
There's just too much good stuff.
Yeah. The problem with all these indie games is that they just crank them out too fast.
Yeah,
assholes. I don't know. I have time for it.
Well, there's a large window at night.
This happened the other day when I was on Netflix. I had like an hour or two. I was like, okay, baby's asleep. I can watch TV. I'm going to go on Netflix and find something. Mm-hmm. And the choice is so that you end up with paralysis. You can't pick anything.
This has become a real problem. It's the problem our children face, is that they live in a world of infinite entertainment, which is something that our generation has never been trained how to deal with.
Yeah.
We're like monkeys in a room full of a million buttons and they all give bananas.
Stuff. I would almost prefer it if I just lived in a room where like one game a month was just dropped through a slot in the wall.
And we can arrange
this. This is what you're going to play now. And I could enjoy it.
You want like the old boy experience.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Instead of the food, you get the game.
It's like a hamburger slot and a game slot. Is it a hamburger day or is it a game day?
Yeah, for 15 years.
I don't know. We'll see.
But then I might actually play some games. I mean, this is a real thing. I hear about people that have these massive backlogs. It's not just me. The problem. People aren't playing games because there are too many games. It sounds ridiculous, but it's a thing.
Well, So I started playing Euro Truck Simulator the other night.
Oh, God.
Because I heard it had Rift support, and then it didn't, but I'd already bought it by then. And the Rift support's coming.
Oh, man, I can't wait
for
the Rift to be a real thing. It's going to be the best.
I drove around England in a lorry for, an hour and a half. It's a truck.
It's an English truck.
Yeah.
Like a pickup truck?
No.
No, like a,
like a big rig.
Like a big rig.
Okay.
What we would call an articulated lorry.
So is a lorry... Are they ones that have twisty, so the cab is separate from the trailer?
That would be an articulated lorry.
That's a lorry is just it's all one thing.
An articulated
thing, like
one
bus.
Is one there's two trailers and they can kind of bend around corners.
Does it have
like
to
in
be
the
two
Fast
trailers
and Furious
or just
movies.
One trailer?
What's that? Like in the Fast and Furious movies.
Sure.
Okay.
Why not?
I just wondered, because I always pictured in my head when I read like Douglas Adams' books, a lorry as like a moving van where the cab and the carrying part are attached to each other and they don't bend.
No, a lorry is the same as like a tractor trailer, big rig type truck.
Good to know.
Same thing.
You also went to a water park.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you have a kid now.
We took Monday off and just decided to blow it off and go to Raging Waters before the season ended.
How far away is that?
It's about an hour. It's in San Jose.
Okay.
I love going to water parks and going to water slides is like my favorite thing in the world. But like, it's one of those things that just never got around to doing.
Sounds like the kind of thing that
for some years
not be good for a germaphobe.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of chlorine in the water.
That water is so chlorinated that when your eyes hit it, they immediately turn red and explode.
Yeah. It's very, very, I mean, you're basically swimming in bleach.
Yeah.
It sounds like a challenge.
What?
For a pooper.
Did you take the baby into the slides and stuff?
Yeah.
I guess
she didn't go on any slides, but they have lots of little splishy splashy paddling areas for little kids.
Just for explicitly for small children.
Yes.
So that if somebody drops a deuce in the pool, nobody's going to be upset.
I mean,
what's the protocol on that
potential?
Well, she poops. If she's like artist, she poops at will. She's just in there.
Yeah, but she has swim. But she wears
swim
diapers that catch the poop.
Wait.
Swim diapers for babies?
Yeah.
What's swim diapers for adults? Swim diaper.
They are swim diapers.
Okay.
And they don't retain pee. That just goes straight through.
Okay. That never get in the kid pool.
But it prevents poop from escaping.
So what? It's like
that's got to be the worst thing to change. To have to change.
It's just a free-flowing...
It didn't come up, but...
some babies don't poop in the water.
Yeah, some don't.
My baby doesn't poop in the tub.
So we went to the park, and I went on some slides.
Okay.
And enjoyed them immensely. There's one slide at Raging Waters in San Jose, which is insane. When I didn't know what it was. I just saw a long thing going
up. You just got in the line?
I'm like, this looks like a good line to get into. So I got into it.
Okay.
And when you get to the top, when I got to the top and saw what it actually was, I seriously considered just going back down. But I couldn't do the walk of shame back down the stairs.
They have that though, right?
Yeah.
Well, did you push any little kids out of the way or anything?
Did you
cause any scenes? What was the
slide? I didn't stand on my way back down the stairs.
Explain the slide. Why was
it
scary?
So it's called Bombs Away.
Okay.
And what happens is when you get to the top, it's a vertical shaft. That looks basically like a chamber, like a pod that one person can stand
in. Is it enclosed?
Yeah, they open up a door. Imagine a shower stall, or when you see people in cryogenic suspension pods.
Yes. Okay,
you're standing in the pod and there's a door.
Yeah,
it's a cylinder basically, and a cylindrical door that opens, and they put you in it. And they close the
door.
Is
there a window with
the
door?
Yeah, it's glass.
It's literally a shower stall.
You can see your
it's a cylinder, and half of the cylinder is a clear plastic door that opens.
And they can see the fear in your face right before they pull the lever.
And you can see, you get to see, the next 30 people can all see the previous 30
So there's a lot of anticipation.
Yeah, there's a lot of anticipation. You see a lot of people go.
Yeah.
They shut the door, and there's a countdown. And there's basically a trap door under your feet that collapses open. And it just drops you a sheer drop for, I don't know, 20 or 30 feet into a funnel of water. It's basically like being flushed down a massive toilet.
Wait, there's no water when you're dropping 30 feet?
No, as soon as you drop, you're in a torrent of water.
Okay.
But the first 3 or 4 seconds just feels like a complete free fall.
And are you like sliding along
then you
a funnel
hit,
at
and
this
then
point?
You hit this torrent of water that kind of spirals down.
Are you?
And then dumps you out at the
very
bottom.
Do you have
the
urge to brace the walls?
I mean, it's so fast, and the whole thing's over in like less than 10 seconds.
Oh.
And it's just insane.
Wow.
You know how like even you know how like the scary rides, like you don't want to go on the first time, but then once you do it the first time, you're like, oh, let's go back on.
That felt really good.
This one I was like, one was enough. It was good. I'm glad I went on it, but like, I would not be in a hurry to go on it again.
So the trapdoor is one of those things that like in your imagination and in film and pop culture pops up all the time. But I bet that this is your first real life experience with a trapdoor.
I've ever actually gone through a trapdoor.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool.
It doesn't come up often.
No.
You didn't come out as Batman.
No.
But I mean, did you feel like you were flying or did you just drop and like, did you scream? Was it a yelling experience?
I did scream.
Was
out
there
loud.
Cursing?
Everybody does.
Yeah, of course.
It's almost impossible not to. And the thing is that, you know, of course, the great thing about it is that there's a 10-second countdown.
Yeah.
And that 10 seconds is in many ways the worst.
Can you bail out once you're in the pod?
I think.
Could you like, let me out?
I think if you were to if you were to freak out, you could like bang on it and the guy would stop you.
But you know when the trapdoor is going to open. It's not like it's a surprise.
There's a 5-second countdown.
Okay, so it's so,
and there's a woman, you know, there's a 5, 4, 3, and then it drops you.
So the way to make that worse would be to not put you in there and have an indeterminate period of time when the trapdoor opens.
I don't know if it's better or worse.
I think that would be terrifying.
You do at least know when the trapdoor is going to open.
Yeah, at least it's certain.
But whatever you think it's going to be, it's worse.
What's the diameter of that tube?
Or I'm thinking about gaming the system.
I don't know. It's obviously, you know, wide enough that a larger person could go down if they wanted to. I think the weight limit on it was like 250.
Who designed the ride? Do you know who the park designer was on this particular?
I didn't get that into it. But I did go down a lot of regular slides as well. They were a lot of fun. And my favorite thing to do at any water park is just to bobble around in the lazy river for a few laps.
I love the lazy, like
I
the
love
tube,
the endless. Yeah, yeah, you just get in the tube and you just bumble around the little lazy current.
They have like the fake waves.
Yeah, we went in the wave pool.
Yeah, that's always nice. I like when the tube rivers have like a little, just enough rapids that you might spill a drink if you had a cocktail. Can you drink at water parks? I don't even know if you can.
No, they don't serve liquor there.
It's probably
you
best.
Know what? I don't know if you've noticed this, but like it might be the chlorine. I don't know what it is, but like when you've been swimming or going to a water park, the hunger that results from that is like hunger you've ever experienced.
It's because you're using a lot of energy.
Yeah. So they sell the shitty burgers and fries and stuff. And like we got a burger. It was like $8 for the shitty burger. And it was shitty.
Yeah.
But it tasted like. It really hit the spot because when you're that hungry, you just don't care.
Well, you burn a lot of calories.
Yeah.
Just staying warm.
Yeah.
In terms of shitty burgers, you hear about the $300,000 shitty burger that was tasted
in nice
London?
Heck.
Oh, that Sergey Brin.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
be
interested in that.
Really?
Yeah.
It's the future, man. You better get used to it.
I'd prefer if the future was like real organic food.
Good
as
luck.
As opposed to fucking Soylent Green or whatever this thing was.
Good luck.
Well, they took, what was it? Fetal.
You see, you lost me right
blood.
There. You
some,
lost me at
cow's
fetal.
Blood.
You like veal?
I do like
and
veal.
Then veal's just young, though. It's not unborn.
Same difference.
Yeah, some of those stem cells and
you lost me at stem cells.
Made a hamburger patty.
Yeah. What's
so,
the point
so they
of
grew
that?
The cells and culture.
If this is potentially some solution to world hunger, then
yeah,
right.
That's the whole point.
That's okay. The solution.
The whole point is 20 years down the line, maybe 10 years down the line, the technology will be ready.
So
enough.
So what was the verdict on how it tasted?
It didn't taste like a burger. I think the
is it like the teleported steak in the fly?
The you know how
remember that it didn't taste right. It didn't taste real. It tasted synthetic.
Yeah, like the replicated food never tastes as good as the real grown ones.
Right,
and that will
because the computer doesn't understand the human dimension.
It's just like it's like processed foods, right? There's a level of complexity in actual food. This is why that Soylent stuff that those kids are selling is such a phenomenally bad idea. It's supposed to be a complete nutritional replacement for food, but in reality, we don't understand
the
all
thing
the
is,
stuff
most
that's in
of the food.
Food
that this is why we have such a problem in this country and around the world with obesity and bad diet is that so much of the food that tastes the best is the heavily processed stuff, which has been chemically engineered to taste as good as possible.
Well, that is yes, the big food
you know, like
companies
one of for me, one of the tastiest things in the world, and I try to limit my eating of it. But if you've ever had like chicken in a biscuit,
that stuff is great.
The worst kind of garbage.
It's a cracker.
It's so
tastes like a chicken.
It's so tasty because they've had like evil fucking Nazi rocket scientists.
I don't
going,
think. let's not say Nazis, but they're evil scientists.
But like, you know, like in Breaking Bad, when they're presenting the various chicken dipping sauces, and they talk to you about all the chemical engineering that went into creating them.
Yeah,
like that is genius.
The New York Times did a huge story about this earlier this year.
Yeah,
one of the things that they have found is that teams of scientists at Frito-Lay and Kraft and
just the thing about creating the perfect
food companies,
Cheeto,
right? Would A/B test thousands and thousands of variations of, say, the Cheeto recipe to figure out the optimal construction for that piece of food that means you can eat as much of them as you want. You never want to stop eating them. You're never actually satisfied.
Yeah.
And you just keep eating more.
Yeah.
And it's the same with even things that are supposedly fresh, like fresh squeezed orange juice, which like the Simply Orange. It's all – The trick there is a perfectly consistent flavor, so every bottle of Simply Orange juice tastes exactly the same, even though it is all
fresh squeezed.
They
spent millions just figuring out the perfect dissolving ratio of like a Cheeto
flavor.
Like the way that a Cheeto melts on your tongue is so perfectly engineered. You don't put any thought into it. You just know it tastes really good.
Yeah.
Like the other thing,
and you can never eat just two.
You know how there's only four shapes of Chicken McNugget?
Yeah.
And they've been perfectly designed to make it seem like each one has its own random shape.
But
if you actually pay attention, there's only four shapes.
Let's buy 20
Go buy 100 nuggets and lay them all out, and you will be able to divide them all into
four
boxes.
What are the shapes?
They have names.
Boot, bell, bucket, and can't remember the last one.
Boot, bell, bucket, boot.
Boot, bell, bucket, and ball, maybe? I can't remember.
There's a round one. I haven't had McNuggets in 10 or 12
years. But I guarantee you will find – every now and again, obviously, there's an aberrative one that comes through. But for the most part, there's four shapes.
Bell, bone, boot, and ball.
There you go.
Right. Bone. Yeah. Bone.
Bone. Processed food's real bad.
Well, in the future, we can have fake steaks.
The other thing that the vat-grown meat opens up is long-term habitation in space.
Does it also mean that vegetarians could eat meat and not have to worry about the mistreatment of animals?
Because
that
question.
Would be good.
Yeah, I mean, if it depends on how much of a vegetarian you are,
Can't
I guess.
I mean, I guess, then you get into a whole other ethical thing about whether or not a stem cell has rights.
Right. I mean, at that point, what you're growing is more like has never been natural life. So
I would probably
who cares?
Be
Let it rip.
If it tasted as good, which sounds like they've still got a way to go.
Yeah, it's
but if it
time.
Tasted as good, I would probably be more. I know that I'm a hypocrite when I eat a burger. I don't particularly like the fact. I think that 99% of people, and I would include myself among this, if you took any of them to like a slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. Where the cows that go into McDonald's burgers are slaughtered, you'd probably never eat another burger in your life. Once you'd actually seen it. And so I live in kind of willful ignorance of that, and it's very hypocritical of me. But I do think that if they could create burgers where there was no animal suffering involved in creating them, I'd probably feel much more comfortable eating that. Yeah.
So
you have to taste just as good.
I've actually slaughtered or helped slaughter pigs and chickens and stuff like
that.
Have
the lambs stop screaming, Will?
Yeah, I never did lambs. And I've never done anything as big as a cow. But
did you actually hang a thing up and like slit its throat?
Yeah, that's
like,
the way you do a pig. It's not like in that situation, in a non-industrial setting, it wasn't, you know, it was unpleasant. But at the end, you get really good sausage.
Yeah.
And it's,
but
like,
there's something about
the
industrial
with respect
just
that
killing machine nature of like an abattoir that I think is just
well, it's
be
like
so
that Bourdain episode where he went to the Ozarks, but then they invited him to that ceremonial like eating of the killing slaughtering of the pig where they took after they killed the pig they deconstructed it and used every single part for something, but then the start of that ceremony was he had to shoot the pig in the head.
Yeah That's not fun.
No,
it's you know, but I mean if you eat food, if you like food, it's part of it. The question is where you get that stuff and what you're okay with and making sure it's as humane as possible and slaughterhouses and stuff.
So look,
much,
I mean on the surface the idea of like
ago.
Synthetically grown beef sounds kind of gross, but you can clearly see some reason if they can get it working, why it
can't
might potentially
wait
be really good.
Till 50 years down the line, the old people start lamenting about the days when they had real
well,
real beef.
Soylent Green, man. Remember?
Oh, it used to taste so good. Now we have this pot roast in a vat.
The beginning of Soylent Green, when Charlton Heston comes in with a couple of slices of pieces of lettuce and a steak that he steals from the Elysians. It's amazing.
It'll be nice to live up in Elysium.
Let's talk about. I learned about the zipper merge this morning.
Yeah,
which I think.
And I again, that was a thing. It's always fascinating where you feel like the thing that you've known for the longest time actually turns out to be completely wrong.
That is a thing.
So
watch as Will now finds a way to point out that he wasn't in fact wrong.
I think you were looking for an excuse.
Whoa,
I think
the no, zip, no, no, no,
let me
let's
paint
not
a word
make it
picture.
About Gary. Let's
okay. So I'm driving up one from our houses, respectively, because we live about a mile apart now. And coming up one, there are a series of three lights. They're about a mile and a half apart each. The first one is where I turn to leave my house. The second one is where your house is. And the third one is before the road becomes a freeway. So once you get past that third light, it's usually free going. But there's usually some backup because the last light is a little bit slow.
And lots of people making the turns. And
right. There's a big – where Gary's Road feeds in, there's a giant – there's a lot of people that come in there. And that light's usually long – it's about even
but
though one has like three times as much
traffic. Busy road, except no. Right now there's one lane closed for construction.
Sure. Right. So there was power crew out. They had one lane closed. It was right before that last slow light.
Right.
Which is backing up to everyone behind the first pass.
Which backs up everyone behind it for like 4 miles.
And when
miles.
This happens, they put highway signs way down the road warning you that a lane is going to be closed up ahead.
They
and
didn't
that you should
actually
merge.
This time, but they
but
should
typically
have.
They do.
Yes.
That.
Okay.
So. The specific circumstance today is that the only space there was room to merge was between the second light and the third light. Between the first and the second light, it was just cram packed.
You're talking about merging
from the blocked lane to the not blocked lane.
So a lot of people either stuck in that blocked lane.
Either both lanes were not moving until you get to the first light. When you get past the second light, it opens up a little tiny bit. Except for the people turning right out of Gary's Road are constantly filling. Both like blocking the intersection. So then what happens is people start to get through, but the next light is too slow. So it really, there's a real bad thing that happens there. And then everybody merged over. We did the zipper merge successfully.
What is the zipper merge?
So the zipper merge is, the theory is that you get to the end and everybody just lets the car in front of them in. You get to the part where you're supposed to merge.
Okay.
And then people just let the next car in. But people were doing it as they went. So cars would move forward. If there was a gap, you let the car in. People would,
okay.
And then that leaves a gap in the right lane because people were merging too early, according to the fucking internet. Now, when this goes bad, that right lane opens up and people start going 80 miles an hour up the right lane when the left lane is completely parked.
But when,
and then try to squeeze in at the last
but
minute.
But here's what's interesting. Typically,
that's never good.
Typically, we're usually very annoyed when we see people racing up the open lane that when they know it's going to close sooner or later. They want to make as much progress as they can in an open lane.
How is this different?
And they're not merge over until the cones force them to.
And how is this different
we generally consider that
that's antisocial.
Right,
but what we've learned now from the Minnesota Department of Transport is that is actually what you are supposed to do. And merging earlier actually slows the traffic down even more.
If you went and read the page, it gave a very specific set of conditions in which the zipper merge is supposed to be used.
How is this different from if you're in a highway or freeway, and there was an exit-only lane with a solid dotted.
That's different because there's no backup usually.
And
you're not supposed to do it when there's traffic at high speed.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only when you're going at a like less than 10 or 15 miles an hour or something like that.
So what Gary's saying is that you're supposed to fill up the right lane.
Use both lanes.
You're supposed to maximize all the lanes.
But if you use both lanes in this case, because the light is jacked up after the merge, it would have just made things a lot worse.
We learned about the zipper merge today from our friend Chris Tilton.
Oh, we learned from
who worked on SimCity. So, of course, I actually felt like we missed an opportunity for a great comeback there where I could have said, dude, you worked on SimCity. Why the fuck should I listen to you about traffic?
I'm not going to. Chris did the music on SimCity, so I don't think he's responsible for the
traffic. The door
is
still open for me to get in there. The door only needs to be open a crack.
I mean, getting out of our town is basically a SimCity endeavor. It's one long ass winding road, and it's the only way in or out of town.
I have a different perspective now on the merging thing.
Yeah,
I think the problem is the zipper merge only works if everybody knows how to do it. If only half of the people.
It's a prisoner's dilemma.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking zipper merge.
Yeah.
I think it's an excuse for people to be assholes. That's what I think.
I don't think people need excuses.
I don't think we need more excuses for people to be assholes. Should we talk about some tech news?
Probably
some actual tech
point.
News.
Sure.
I think the big thing this week is that John Carmack is now the CTO of Oculus VR.
I made the statement earlier this week, and I stand by it, that that's the biggest story in games this year.
I think you're crazy because I think the Xbox 180 is a much bigger story.
Why is that a bigger story?
It never has a console manufacturer done that much of a backtrack after announcing the way their system's going to be and after popular uproar.
I think you just don't know what bigger story means, both of you. Like, define what do you mean by bigger story?
Well, and
the most
that's the crux of my
users,
argument. For me, a bigger – the size of a story I quantify that by how much is it going to affect me at the end of the day. The net result of the Xbox 180 was zero. Basically, things are just the way they've always been. So my gaming life is not going to change at all. John Carmack, who is one of the most brilliant pioneers in games and technology, going to Oculus Rift, which already has the potential, I think, to completely change the way we play games forever, put those two things together, and I think that has the potential now to be one of the biggest game changers in the way that we play video games,
pioneer.
Interact with our computers, everything. So that is potentially have a huge change on our lives. The Xbox 180 basically just said, oh, you know what, nothing's going to change.
You know what,
so
you're right.
How
I
is
agree
the fact
with
that
you.
Nothing's going to change
right.
to be a big story?
100% correct. I agree. Couldn't agree with you more.
Hold on a second. And we are recording this, yes?
Yeah, no, this is live.
Oh, my goodness. This is unbelievable.
You know, you make it a very compelling point. I think it's a little premature, but I will say,
don't get me wrong, it's still a big deal that Microsoft, you know, came out and clearly had a big plan, and then under public pressure recanted on it. And by the way, I think it's a shame they recanted on a lot of it, because they gave up a lot of stuff that actually would have been very good. Not requiring discs, games in the cloud, all that kind of stuff was actually great. And because people complained about sharing and other things, they've had to throw all that away. And now, you know, the next generation is going to look much like the last one.
Have we not had you on since? Yeah. Well, so the mistake that they made is that instead of – there was a happy medium in there somewhere that was in between daily check-ins and status quo.
Yeah.
I mean, and
they had a lot of fail safes. Like, you could have your cell phone check in for you if your Xbox, for whatever reason, you know, your connection went down.
But
the
daily check in, let's all agree, daily check in is a bit much.
People don't like the Big Brother aspect of it.
Yeah.
But again, that what that facilitated, like games, not having to worry about where the disc is and all that kind of stuff, that would have been great.
So Carmack is the CTO of Oculus now. He's still going to stay on at ID. I think he listed his priorities as Oculus
is number one.
ID. Armadillo Aerospace is rocket ship company.
When your rocket ship company is your number three priority, you're pretty.
Well, the X Prize is over.
Yeah, I wonder where Elon Musk falls. Like, is it like Tesla, SpaceX?
I think it's SpaceX, Tesla, Hypertube far and back.
Yeah,
Hypertube.
I think Tesla's going to end up being the machine that drives SpaceX. You see their results on their financial results on Tesla. Their stock is booming.
Well, are they selling, are they making? I thought I had heard that demand for their cars has kind of slowed down.
No, you should just check what the numbers they just posted.
You don't have to get there's no wait list anymore, though, is my understanding.
Put Tesla into a Google News search and watch what comes up.
I mean, the numbers were they were making money, or they could have been losing money depending on how you look at it, but they also repaid all their government loans.
That's true.
Way ahead of schedule.
Yeah, so they sold 51 Model S's in Q2. And they have a $35,000 model coming. So,
wait,
yeah. I mean,
51? More than 51.
5,100.
Okay.
What do you think?
But look at what their stock price is.
51.
Yeah, but stock price, and we all know the difference. I've actually looked at electric cars. I'm thinking about getting one for the commuter. Because we have one car that we drive back and forth.
I'm waiting for
30
the,
miles, 26 miles.
I'm waiting for the X.
The SUV?
Yeah.
Well, so there's two different classes of electric cars. There's the 75-mile range, and then there's the 300-mile range. And pretty much the Tesla is the only thing in that 300-mile range right now. Mm-hmm. But you can get a little shitbox electric commute that'll do 75 or 80 miles a day for practically nothing.
Yeah, and that's,
they're almost free.
And that's 90% of your driving.
Yeah, I mean, we literally have one car that only drives from here to the office to Adams.
What do you think,
making
like a Leaf or something?
Yeah, a Leaf or one of the Fiat Electrics or something
capacity
like that.
Capacity matters, though, for that stuff, depending on what you do.
You mean like, haulage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if I can't fit Joey and you in the car, it's much less useful. Yep.
The problem is like I have enough battery anxiety on my phone. I don't want that shit on my car.
Well they come with roadside service and stuff like that. Yeah. And most of the cars, with a few exceptions, do fast charges.
I totally cramed it coming back from LA this week. Where I was coming back a different.
Hold on, I want to. Norm, let's guess what cramering means. Did you do wide lanes?
No. Is that
think about the context of the conversation that we're having?
I understand, but I don't know the thing I think about. You did the Michigan deposit.
No, the classic episode where he's riding on fumes for so long until
he takes a car out on a test drive and he wants to drive. He wants to see how far the car will actually go past the E line.
Yeah,
and they end up having this like Thelma and Louise type, never felt so alive type moment.
Yep. I might not have ever seen that.
You've never
one.
Seen that
it's
one.
Classic.
No. It's called the car dealership or something.
That seems right. Is it an early one?
I can't remember where it is in the.
So you're driving back from LA.
I was driving back from LA because
you make that trip a lot, so you know where the gas stations are.
Well, not anymore because driving back through Pacifica, I now take the 152 and it's a different route back.
You come across the reservoir and all that stuff?
What I do is I drive up the 5 till 152 West, drive through Gilroy, yeah. and then up the
101. We did that.
I did that down at LA.
So anyway, so I'm still learning like where my pit stops are. Anyway, I glance down at my odometer and the thing that said 4 miles to empty.
Oh, that's not good.
How far away from a gas station were you?
I said, Siri, find me a gas station.
Oh, that was your second mistake.
And it found one. The closest one was 2.7 miles away.
Oh,
so I coasted
a mile and a third to spare.
On vapor.
That's not good for the car.
When you don't feel alive, you just feel very anxious.
When you get on 152, like there's a window there where it's probably 25 miles with no gas stations.
Best place. He's got to stop at the gas station by Harris Ranch.
If your car ran on cherries or garlic, you'd be golden.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no gas stations.
Fresh strawberries.
Yeah.
We stopped at Harris Ranch on the way to Comic-Con.
I've never actually had a steak. I've had a steak at the Harris here in San Francisco, but not at the Harris Ranch.
I think that's different, isn't it?
I find it off-putting to eat a steak when I can smell the cows.
Well, the air conditioning is so strong inside.
Yeah, they're really good. Yeah.
But it is just several miles from the actual ranch, which has 100,000 cows. It's the biggest ranch on the West Coast.
It is huge.
I mean, you can't.
And it just smells of cow.
Smells for miles.
Constantly.
But it's a perfect place to get gas on one side of the freeway and then drive across. And have a nice steak lunch.
There's a gas station right next to the place.
And you can stay there. It's a resort. Yeah. There's a hotel. There's a whole thing there.
Who are the people who buy the uncooked, like the meat there?
The meat to go?
And then
they'll
like have to drive
for you.
3 hours
Yeah, they'll
home.
Pack it in ice or whatever.
They'll put in a cooler for you. It's fine.
It's not cheap either.
Well, it's a tourist destination.
It does stand out because otherwise your options all along there are pretty much, you know, Denny's.
Well, there's
Taco.
The pea soup place.
The pea soup place is okay.
Yeah.
There's
an In-N-Out that's pretty good.
At Carl's Jr.
Ooh.
On the way back, because I wanted to try the Pop-Tart ice cream sandwich, which is a big deal there
Pop-Tart.
Right now.
Pop-Tart?
So it's an ice cream sandwich
so they take
with two Pop-Tarts?
They take a Pop-Tart.
Yeah. What flavor?
They snap it, strawberry.
Okay.
They
good.
Snap it in half.
Oh.
Put a baseball
size. Like long
size,
ways or short ways?
Long.
Is it square or
Well, they don't make
rectangular.
Two strips. They,
okay.
They cut it in half down the middle.
Okay.
And they put like a baseball size chunk of vanilla ice cream in there.
Wow.
And make a sandwich, and they put that in the freezer, so the Pop Tart is frozen as well.
That sounds pretty revolting.
It was really good.
I don't like raw Pop Tarts.
Oh, I love. I don't think I've ever had a toasted one. I just eat them right out of the wrapper.
Oh, I always toast.
The problem with Pop Tart, in addition to being very, very one of the worst things you could have in the morning,
food wise,
they're
sugar,
terrible.
Sugar.
Oh, it's just nothing but shit.
Processed dough.
Yeah.
Is that?
Oh my god! I looked at the nutrition on those new chocolate peanut butter Pop Tarts, which I was so close to getting, and I looked
good.
One
save.
Look at the nutrition facts, and I'm like, okay, this is going back.
The filling isn't even in a Pop Tart. There's too much, like almost 3/4 inch of just bread on one side and then filling. Like, it's not evenly spread out.
The thing
out.
Is, if you're going to eat that much sugar, you might as well just get, like, a really good cupcake or something. There's no point in eating something that just tastes like strawberry cardboard.
Did you see the new Taco Bell waffle taco?
Yeah, I posted about that the day before you did. You were slow on the uptake
on
that one. It looks great. Although, it looks like they just took a waffle and just folded it to make a taco out of it.
Yes, and it's a breakfast taco.
I'm excited about it.
Eggs.
I hope they do roll it out nationwide.
It doesn't. It's really, you could do it at home with a waffle.
Well, Jack in the Box has
sausage.
A waffle breakfast sandwich,
mm-hmm.
which I think is potentially even better.
Probably the same thing. The taco form factor is the innovation there. And then there's also this thing in New York, the ramen burger.
Hmm.
It's a burger, but the buns are cooked in special ramen noodles.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I, for the longest time, resisted the whole business of like sweet and savory in a breakfast. Like, I always ordered my pancakes separate from my sausage and eggs and stuff.
Oh,
but,
no. Sweet and savory together is great.
One time, the syrup accidentally kind of like got over there. And you know what? It's actually pretty good.
It's magical. It's not even good. It's
amazing.
I still
never understand what my wife does, where we go to Wendy's and she takes her French fries and dips them in her Frosty.
Yeah, it's the best.
That is just
Gina does that
wrong.
Too. It's gross. No wonder they get along.
French fries and ice cream is
that's fucked up.
It's delicious.
You guys are monsters.
And soft serve. John Carmack, what's he going to do for Oculus?
Oh, yeah. We were talking about tech news.
Oh, yeah. I think that, there was kind of a falling out. There was a perceived falling out. Because originally, remember, the Oculus Kickstarter was supposed to ship with Doom BFG support.
And
John Carmack was one of the first, you know, real proponents
of this. He was working on his own thing, then saw the Oculus thing and said, oh, this is they're ahead of where I am and they're doing it better, so why should I duplicate their work? And then sometime between there and when the Kickstarter released, they pulled out. backed John out Carmack. Entirely. Carmack did.
Because Bethesda and John Carmack was demoing early Oculus at QuakeCon.
So it's unclear. There's a weird sequence of events. At one point, I understood that he was demoing something he built that was cobbled together. And then later on, I was told that that was an Oculus proto. And I don't know exactly what the specifics are of that. But the upshot is, there was a relationship, then there wasn't, and now he's the CTO.
And this happened just less than a week after QuakeCon, this year's QuakeCon.
And he talked about VR a ton at QuakeCon, apparently.
So I know what that happened when we were recording the podcast last week, so we didn't get to hear the entire John Carmack keynote, the 3-hour keynote he does every year. But the big tell, apparently, from people who went to QuakeCon is that John Carmack did no interviews at QuakeCon this year.
Really?
No interviews.
Huh.
I think it's huge for Oculus. I think it's a huge. I mean, again, all you need to do to believe in Oculus is strap on those goggles for 2 minutes, and you're a believer.
And the HD or the full HD ones, 1080p goggles, if they can get that for a consumer release.
Yeah, but in terms of the journey towards legitimacy, this is obviously a huge get. In real, you know, in terms of what's actually going to happen under the hood, Carmack obviously is a genius. He understands this kind of technology probably better than anyone on the planet. He's a huge asset to them. But I think he's also going to help drive adoption. Developers are going to take this more seriously. They're going to want to get involved. I think it's a big, big step towards this being an actual breakout commercial product that people are going to buy and developers will support, and it's going to be a big way that we play games.
Here's someone who has literally been making games since the dawn of PC gaming.
But it's still relevant now. There are a lot of people who were pioneers in PC gaming.
Well, but he's always been on the bleeding edge of technology also backed off.
He's pulled
back.
Gloves and gadgets and gimmicky controllers over the years.
Yeah.
This is...
I have one right here.
And they've all failed. I mean, when was the last time that an out-of-the-box type, different kind of control mechanism or anything?
The Xbox 360 controller. Like that. Once you got the Xbox 360 controller, it has essentially destroyed everything except for the niche stuff like wheels and flight sticks and stuff.
But
like
it's
that.
But that's just a it's just a gamepad. It's just a game controller. That's part of the natural progression of what we had since the NES.
At one point, a dual stick gamepad was a novel thing. Remember, in the old days, gamepads were a D-pad and 4 buttons or 6 buttons.
Yes, but it's all part of a natural evolution. Whereas this is something completely new, completely different. And I think this will be the first and only thing that we've ever seen that is totally radical. That will actually achieve
better startup Oculus magazine.
I found my space orb the other day. Do you remember the space orb, Gary?
Oh, yeah. Awful.
It was a ball on a 6-axis controller with six buttons.
Absolutely terrible.
It was really useless.
There's a documentary about the Power Glove that's being made right now that's quite interesting as well.
Full documentary just on the Power Glove? I don't know if that's...
Kinect. I mean, I'm actually, even though I've been burned once, I'm willing to believe the next generation Kinect in the Xbox One is actually very good. I think it actually does what the first one was supposed to do but didn't. The first Kinect...
The
Kinect
Wiimote,
now just sits in my junk drawer with all the other shit.
The Wii Remote is the most recent thing that was a success.
Yeah.
Because it actually worked.
That's the only one.
Yeah.
And again, that had the benefit of being bundled, you know, and having the support of a
Nintendo
major
games that came
company.
With it.
This is a third-party company that's trying to get people to support it.
Are there any games on 360 situation. With the Kinect 1 where the Kinect isn't the controller, but the information from the Kinect is still being used in some way to feedback?
There's voice commands in a fair number. Like even Skyrim, you can cast like shouts on the Xbox
more
with
of a passive
voice.
Thing.
Well, that's a... You can use your voice to cast spells and stuff like that in Skyrim.
Like
that's
because
it.
the new Kinect has all the biometric censoring stuff and just high resolution camera. The way it seems that this stuff should work is that you're using a more traditional controller with something like the Oculus, and then the Kinect just puts you in the game somehow.
Well,
with the camera data.
So the thing that worries me about the Kinect always being on and having the deep biometric stuff is that they're going to use that. You know, right now, when you play a game on Steam or Xbox Live or whatever, they're collecting a lot of metrics to see how far you get and where you die and that kind of stuff. I don't want them to know if I'm smiling or frowning while I'm playing a game.
You should wear a mask.
It's a good idea. Wearing a mask when you play the Kinect.
Have a bigger beard.
Well, I need a bigger beard. Speaking of Xbox One, some more details came out this week. Major Nelson did an unboxing of one of the early prototypes.
It's kind of cool to see one actually
line.
In a box this early. I mean, I'm sure they had to, you know, mock it up. Apparently, they had 20 of them that are fully final units that are in a box and ready to, you know,
I have seen games at Comic-Con. Harmonix was showing Fantasia running on an actual... Either it looked like a real Xbox, it may have been one of the dev kit versions, but it was running on actual hardware, not on a PC.
Well, I mean, look, at this point, it's got to be finalized, right? Because the last 2 months before launch is nothing but manufacturing
and
distribution.
That was a 2014 title, not a 2013 title. Anyway, more details. The headset is not going to be an add-on at this point. It's going to come in the box.
Mm-hmm.
which is relatively new. The Wire.
I wonder why they made that decision, because it sounded like initially they were trying to sell the Kinect microphone as just good
enough. Sony has one in the box.
Sony has one in the box. I mean, that's got to be it.
There's the PS4 shipping with a headset.
With a headset, yeah.
Oh, that's right, because originally the headset was going to be Kinect.
Yeah.
Right.
And we all know how that worked.
There's clearly some resistance to that. People like their headsets.
Well, and if the voice stuff is annoying, people will turn it off, and that's bad for the platform. So it's good that they're shipping the mono headset.
Right.
The controller, unlike current 360 controllers, when you plug a 360 controller in using that play and charge cable or whatever, it's only being provided power. It doesn't become a data connection at that point. Now the 360 controllers are all wired and wireless. And if you plug a cable in, it'll be a wired controller if you use it with batteries or a rechargeable.
But it's not going to come with that cable.
It's unclear. That is unclear. I think it has a micro USB port that you can plug in to charge with. The one is 802.11n, not AC, which
I was disappointed about, but had since been a little bit educated about how why that's not necessary at this point, and how they'll probably just add a dongle or do a hardware revision down the road when AC is fully adopted.
Hardware revision makes
it's
sense.
less of an issue in a post-N world.
What I was subsequently more disturbed to learn about is how PlayStation 4 doesn't even have 5 gigahertz wireless.
2.4?
Wow. 2.4 only.
So the 5 gigahertz thing is as we know in our office, we have 2 5 gigahertz access points, and we have to have 2 because we can't get coverage over the entire
right.
3-room office.
So in communal households or dorm rooms and things like that, it could potentially be an issue.
2.4 has much better penetration.
You need both spectrums.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? They're shipping a $5 HDMI cable in the box, which is new. I think that the Elite versions came with HDMI cables before. But it's a 4K compatible HDMI cable.
So what does that mean?
It means, I guess, thanks, Microsoft.
Could Xbox One even render a game in 4K? I mean, would that be a supported resolution? What's the point?
It's unclear. It'll support 4K for video is the theory.
I mean, I'm sure the processing power can render something,
yeah.
Whether the output can
I think at this point, it's probably like an extra 2 cents for a 1.4 HDMI cable.
It has both. I think both of the next-gen consoles have 4K compatibility.
The funny thing is,
they'll be able to render games.
The funny thing is, you can't even win with a lot of people. I remember when the PlayStation 3 came out, me and a lot of other people were complaining about, oh my god, why isn't there even an HDMI cable in the box? You'd feel like that's required.
Well, back then HDMI cables were also really expensive. Like if you went to Best Buy, I guess still if you go to Best Buy, it's going to be $50. But if you know about Monoprice or Amazon Basic or whatever,
the point is, it's something that should really be packed in. And so people complained about it for a long time, and now Microsoft's actually doing it and packing one in. What are people saying? Oh, big deal. I can get one for Monoprice for $2. Yes, but now you don't have to.
Well, probably we all have enough HDMI cables. It's not a problem.
Actually, we don't. I had to really kind of dig deep the other day to fish out a spare one.
If you need an HDMI cable, just give me a
call. Every now and again, I just go to Monoprice and just buy 5 HDMI cables and just chuck them in a thing so I can
policy.
Never run out.
Arrow. Last couple of things. They also announced that the game DVR service, which is the thing where you basically are always recording and or streaming, is going to be a gold member service only.
Yep.
Sony then came out the next day and said, hey, that's free for us.
Right. As is Skype.
Yeah.
Skype is free as well?
On the Vita. They were making the point that Skype's free on the PlayStation Vita, but you have to pay for it on Xbox Live, on the Xbox.
What about on the PS4?
I don't think Skype is supported on the PlayStation 4.
Oh, I guess they probably wouldn't release – Microsoft wouldn't release Skype on the PS4.
No, I doubt they would.
I think that's it for Xbox One.
I'm excited about these new consoles. It's going to be great.
I'm just excited that there are new
consoles. What are the Xbox One launch titles that we care about? I don't know.
It seems like it's Watch Dogs is the big one.
Okay. That's PlayStation 4 as well, though. I mean, what do they have exclusively at launch?
Titanfall.
Okay.
And the Bungie game. I don't think that's a – sorry. The
Destiny?
Destiny is a – is exclusive to one or the other, isn't it?
Destiny is multi-format, isn't it?
Maybe it's both. And then there's Rise.
It's going to be another thing where like the launch lineups are like, but the games will come.
Well, I mean, Watch Dogs is a Ubisoft title that I feel fairly confident is not going to be shit.
Yeah.
Which is unusual for their launch titles usually.
Be cool.
And then you'll get, for anything that there's a PC version and an Xbox One version, you'll get a better experience, obviously. It's not, hopefully this go around, it's not going to be like the 361 straddle titles like Gun and all that Activision garbage that were just the original Xbox versions also released on 360 that looked terrible. I don't know if you played any of it. Like, it was Call of Duty 3, Gun.
Gun, there was a bunch.
Tony Hawk's American Wasteland.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff that was released on both platforms and was the old version, not the new version. So.
Right.
Anyway. Arrow. Do you know what Arrow is, Gary? Arrow.
No, I don't think so.
So Arrow is a company that does they kind of act like an internet TV company. And if you live in one of the supported metropolitan areas, you can subscribe and get local over-the-air channels delivered via the internet for like $7 or $8 a month.
Oh, okay.
So, and they do it by having these massive antenna arrays. So basically what they're doing is saying, hey, we're providing you an antenna just like you would have in your house, and then we're going to deliver content to you from the antenna over the internet.
Let me guess. I'm sure someone's trying to shut that down.
They have naturally. CBS. Everyone. All the broadcasters are suing
CBS
them.
Has blacked out.
No, that's different.
That's Time Warner.
That's because of Time Warner price disputes. I want to say Fox threatened to stop doing over-the-air broadcasts as a result of
this.
Yeah,
I remember reading about that.
So they're in – right now it's available in New York City, Boston, and Atlanta. They just announced that they're expanding to Miami, Dallas, and Houston in September, which means that aside from L.A., they have all of the L.A. and Chicago, they have the biggest markets in the country.
We're a small market.
We are a small market here. Although with San Jose, we're not too small.
Too many San Franciscans pride themselves on not having TVs.
Well, if you have this and a laptop, then you have a TV. So congratulations. The Amazon, Apple book publishers settlement happened last week. The DOJ made their ruling basically about what is happening to Apple as a result of this. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that kind of doesn't matter to normal people. Probably if you bought books from the iBook store, you're going to get some refunds. Maybe if you bought books from Amazon, you're going to get some refunds. Mm. But the big deal is that the DOJ said, hey, for 12 months, Apple has to allow Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Google, other competitors, to sell books from their apps without the rules that they applied. Because remember in the old days when the Kindle app on iPad or iPhone, you could tap into and you could buy directly from that? And now if you want to buy a book on your phone, you have to go to the website.
Oh, so they'll be able to bring that back?
They'll be able to bring that back.
Oh, that's great. I like that.
Apple, of course, is protesting, saying it's unjust, and we'll see how it goes. The whole thing seems a little weird to me because it seems like if anybody's being anti-competitive in the ebook scene, it's probably Amazon. But I'm not a lawyer, so what do I know? That's that. Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post.
Yep.
I think he spent $250 million or a quarter of an Instagram.
1% of his worth.
Yeah, so I went and did the math.
So he's worth $25
billion? $25 billion.
$22 billion is the number I saw, but a lot of billions.
Once you're into multiple billions, it kind of doesn't matter.
Holy crap.
If you divide out his net worth versus like a normal person's annual salary, say 50 grand, buying the Washington Post is like a dude who makes 50 grand spending $500.
And he started if you make selling 50 books grand, out of his garage.
$500 is a lot of money. Yeah, I'm just saying it is not – it is. Just to put it in context, it's less than buying a car in Jeff Bezos' terms.
He spent a smaller percentage of his worth on the Washington Post than Sean Parker did of his own net worth.
That's a terrible – I don't want to talk about the Sean Parker wedding here.
Sean Parker got a wedding. It was controversial.
Oh, my God. Beeves.
It's kind of crazy. I think that the growth – the story of Amazon is one of the more fascinating stories in tech in that, you know, Jeff Bezos starts selling – books out of his garage.
Yeah.
And even as they grew and grew and grew, they really just for a long time were just a retailer like Walmart or whatever,
still
online.
Still kind of just a retailer.
Well, no, but that's the point I'm making though, because then they diversified into selling hardware, the Kindle. They now create their own content. They're in the content creation business. They've got original TV shows that are available through
Amazon
Video.
Web Services is a huge part of the bottom line.
We think. We don't know. They don't break it out.
They have this kind of cool holistic approach where they create the content, they sell the content, they see the device that you consume the content on. I mean, there's a reason why they've done so well.
So here's the thing. They don't make a ton of money.
They don't. And the great thing about Jeff Bezos is that he is convinced all investors and stakeholders that they don't need to look for the short-term profits, that they can get by with very, very small profits.
So,
and still the valuation of the company goes up and his net worth goes up.
So the model for Amazon is that they are the modern-day Sears Roebuck. They have a catalog. It's on Amazon.com, and you can buy everything you need to live there. And they're also going to run everyone else out of business, just like Walmart. Walmart and Amazon are very similar.
But Amazon isn't just running retailers out of business. They are expanding into things that – into areas
– well, didn't exist.
That's not retail at all. Services and like Gary said, content creation and everything.
That's true. It's really hard to justify hosting your web stuff someplace other than AWS. It's so cheap. That's the they are building a massive market share in a lot of different industries. It's a little scary, but also,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
I wasn't even thinking about their hosting business, but that's a huge part.
Yeah,
the
AWS stuff is enormous. Yeah. And if you look at sites that are hosted there, once you reach a certain scale, it is almost impossible. Like, it is so much more practical and flexible to host your stuff there than putting it on, you know, old fashioned single use servers or even other
giant
bomb
clouds. Is on Amazon, right?
Everybody is. We are. Giant Bomb is, Netflix is, Reddit is.
Oh wow!
You know, all these huge sites are. Remember when you can tell? Remember when AWS
went
down a few years ago?
So Jeff Bezos, if he wanted to, could like flip a switch and turn off the internet.
Yeah, they're building a CIA data center.
Maybe that's what this is all about.
He's bought a newspaper.
And then he shuts off the internet. And the only way you can get your news is by buying his newspaper.
And the only way you can tell the time is with his $42,000 atomic clock.
Wow.
Or $42 million.
$42 million. It's a 10,000. It's the Long Now project clock, isn't it? Is there a different one?
Whatever the one that costs a lot of money.
10,000 years. Yeah, it's interesting. He's starting to look more and more like a Bond villain, Bezos.
Yeah.
Let's see. Chrome.
Riding around Segways.
Huge controversy. No, was he a Segway? Oh, he was a Segway guy, wasn't he?
Huge Segway guy.
Bezos. Oh, we already did that one. Chrome. There's controversy about Chrome this week. I didn't realize this,
oh,
but
it's the password thing?
This is the password thing. It's bad. If you have access to anyone's Chrome, you can see all the passwords that are saved in Chrome by going to Chrome:// /settings/passwords, and it saves all the passwords in clear text. Now, Google has come out and said, we do this so that there's no illusions that your stuff is actually safe when it's on the browser. But I found this out and I immediately went and deleted all of my saved passwords from Chrome and have since moved the few that lingered over into 1Password, because then they are actually encrypted and protected on your desktop.
1Password is cheap today too.
$8 for
the 1Password.
iPhone app. Are the desktop versions cheap too? Are they doing that sale again?
I'm not sure.
But yeah, it is worth spending. If you don't want to spend money on that, you can get LastPass or KeePass, both of which are less expensive. It's well worth spending money on that. And I like the multi-platform stuff, the third-party stuff, better than the unified things like the ones built into Android and iOS, because then it'll work on all of your devices. Which is much better.
Yeah. I'm probably going to take all my 1Password passwords and put them in the iOS 7 password keeper as well, just so that everything has it.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was a tool that would keep those synced. Assuming you trust Apple to keep your passwords. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I think I do.
Yeah, why not? What's the worst that's going to happen? MakerBot announced that they are selling 3D printers at Microsoft stores this weekend.
Okay.
Including San Francisco,
you'll be able to go and get demos, see how they work. The big news for this for me is that I hope that they're going to sell plastic there, because if they sell plastic in Microsoft stores, then that suddenly gives me a place that I can get plastic at retail.
Well, the Microsoft store in San Francisco is the kiosk in the Westfield Mall.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to sell plastic there. There's one in Hillsdale though, isn't there? There's one across from the Lego store in Hillsdale. I thought
that's the Apple store.
I thought, okay, so then there's one across from the Apple store in Hillsdale. I thought. I can't remember. Maybe it's further down at Stanford.
I haven't seen a Microsoft store in a long time.
Bill Gates talked a lot of shit about Google's Project Loon yesterday. Project Loon is Google's balloon-based internet for third developing countries. I was going to say third world, but I was informed about my mistakes there. The way it works is simple. They float a giant balloon up, and then they hang some transponders off of it and broadcast internet down to the people below the balloons. And Bill Gates said, it's great that you can give them internet, but they're not going to really care when they're dying of malaria.
Burn.
Yeah, Gates has this billionaire fight.
Well, but Gates has got that covered. People can do other things
Gates
as well.
Gates has been doing malaria nets. And
he thinks there could be more money spent on that.
Okay.
Probably true. U.S. District Court said Bitcoin counts as real money and all the rules are applied, so money launderers beware.
Which is a shame, because that's pretty much what Bitcoin is used for.
I'm not even going to get into that. Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Whitta.
I just don't know what a Bitcoin is.
I don't want to know.
It's non-backed by...
I understand it.
It's backed by crypto.
My understanding from New York Times and other articles that I read is that that's the currency you use if you want to buy things that you should not be buying.
Yeah, if you want to buy drugs or launder
or
money.
Hire a hitman or something. Yeah. That's the way to go.
Why is this not in some spy thriller?
Oh, it will be. It's too new.
Yeah.
Dan Brown's all over Bitcoin. He'll fuck it up really bad in his next... Yeah. In
like
his
James
next
Bond
Tom
opens
Hanks.
The briefcase
Bitcoin
after
directive.
Killing and then he takes up the physical Bitcoin.
There's no physical Bitcoin.
I know.
It's a USB thumb drive.
In a movie, and then he redeems it at the casino, the Bitcoin casino.
Imagine if Heat... When they smash the car, the armored car at the beginning of the movie, and they open it up And instead of pulling out a big stack of bearer bonds and putting them into a duffel bag, they bust open and get like a USB thumb drive that looks like Grover. That's what the Bitcoin's stored on.
I never really thought about this, but like when cell phones became a big thing, it became a problem for movie makers and screenwriters because you had to. It used to be cool that you couldn't get to a phone in a story.
Yeah.
That would be a thing. You would have to, that would be an obstacle. Now everyone has a cell phone. They're just like, oh, there's no service, and they would have to find different ways around it.
They got around that in The Matrix.
Well, remember, they built a whole movie cellular around the fact that, oh, people have cell phones now, and that creates new problems. Like in Heat, it's kind of cool. Remember when he goes into the bank vault at the end there, and like the money is so huge, he just puts the bag over it, and then just flips it over, and you go, "Oh, look at all that money! That's really cool." Or like in I can't do the Breaking Bad analogy because Norm won't watch the show, but still doesn't want us to spoil it for him. Whenever you see like a massive pile of money, it's really impressive. But 20 years from now, when people just go, "Oh, here's your $50 million," and it's like a fucking thumb drive, just not going to seem very cool.
In Dark Knight, and Dark Knight Rises. In Dark Knight, there was the one scene where they steal the money and it's this giant stack of money with the guy sitting on top and he lights on a fire. That looked amazing.
Yeah.
And then in Dark Knight Rises, it was Bane on a motorcycle.
What's he going to do now? Like put a magnet on?
Yeah. He had that PDA and that was Bruce Wayne's billions.
Yeah. That's not cool.
Not
as cool. You can't visualize the money anymore.
Well, but the big pile of money is a ridiculous farce anyway because that's trillions of dollars. I mean, you know, it's the $1 million joke. $1 million in a suitcase is like $2.
Yeah, remember in Dodgeball?
Yeah.
You may not have seen $100,000 before and it's just like two little wads of money.
It's really funny.
In ones.
So let's see, Bill Gates. Last thing is
at Comic-Con.
Hold on.
At Comic-Con,
yes.
They had a booth for the new DuckTales HD remaster.
Oh yeah, people are excited about that.
And
that game
the booth
was really hard.
Was the money pit that you can swim in.
Really?
And it was inflatable coins.
Oh wow.
See.
I would love that.
Yeah. Oh, I would have totally jumped in that. Comic-Con crud and all.
That sounds good.
Friend of the site, Scott Hemendinger, who you may know as the Seattle Food Geek. And he's one of the guys. He is, as far as I know, he was the first one that built a DIY sous vide cooking machine.
Like I've been looking at that one on Kickstarter.
Totally.
Two out of three people at this table have bought one already.
I think it might be three out of three at some point.
And I spent my own money. That's not tested business. Yeah.
Once it goes over the limit, I just wait for it to come out and I'll buy it. I don't feel like.
It may take a while for that to become a production item and get distribution and all that.
Right.
Stuff.
So I would wait for it to be a real item before I spend money on it. Is what I'm saying.
Right. Well, you don't. But you know, Kickstarter. If they don't reach the goal, they don't charge you.
But they have reached the goal.
Yeah, they have reached the goal now.
Yes. So I'm saying I will wait for it to be a real product, and then I'll buy it.
Okay.
You wait for it to reach real manufacturing.
Yeah.
So you could be in a Pebble situation there where it takes them a year to go through all the Kickstarter pre-orders and actually reach real manufacturing.
That can happen.
So his Kickstarter's out. I can't remember what the thing's called. But
Sensair.
That's the one I've been talking about.
Yeah. It's great.
It looks good.
I mean, we don't know that it's great. We haven't tested it, but he has the bona fides to make a great sous vide machine inexpensively.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what sous vide is, it's the thing where you put your meat in a plastic bag, soak it in a hot water bath that's at the temperature you want the meat to end up cooked to, and then take it out and blowtorch it or whatever to put a sear on it. When we were at home in Tennessee over the holiday, in June, I actually did a prime rib. I sous vide a prime rib in the cooler for my parents, and with Universal, they were really stoked.
Yeah,
you
still
have to sear it, though.
You still have to sear it, but I mean, you get a MAP blowtorch and just let her rip. It takes 5 minutes. So that'll do it. Oh, we got some more stuff here at the end, not bulleted. It's the 1 year anniversary of the Curiosity landing.
August 8th.
That's gone about a mile or a kilometer. It's gone one of some units.
Yes.
Anything else there?
There's a great time lapse video of every photo that Curiosity has taken from its front cam over the past year, compressed in 2 minutes. And you can see exactly how
far
it's
traveled. That's pretty good. Fun.
It's been a year. It's a full year.
It doesn't seem like that long. It seems like just yesterday they were sitting with biting our nails, waiting to see if the crazy landing maneuver was going to work.
Yeah, I think they knew it was most likely going to work. They couldn't say it because there's a lot of public money at stake, but they knew it was most.
Well, if it hadn't worked, it would have been really bad.
Yeah, I think the one thing they didn't account for was the difference in gravitational pull at that exact spot in that crater. Was slightly different and accounted for like several inches per second.
Denser or lighter?
I think it was. It's might
heavier
have been,
or lighter.
The gravity was stronger there.
Okay.
And so the acceleration was about like 6 inches per second faster than they thought it would be.
So they hit just a little bit harder than they intended to?
Or no, reverse. Actually, it was lighter.
Okay. Yeah. The Wii U, Nintendo selling the Wii U at a loss. I didn't know this. Who did iSupply figure this out?
No, I think they said.
Oh, really? In the financial call?
And that does not mean that they won't do a price break in the future, though.
Well, they're losing money on each unit. It's probably a good thing they're selling so few of them.
Look at us. We're saving all this money. We talked a little bit about that last week, but I think they sold 160,000 Wii U's in the first week.
They're in big trouble.
Last quarter.
They're in big trouble.
Pikmin's quite good.
Oh, I'm sure it's great.
Pikmin's still a great game. But more or less the same.
It's not going to sell a lot of systems. And once the new shit shows up at the end of this year, that's bad.
Gary, tell me about Doctor Who.
Yeah, can you explain Doctor Who?
I don't have a lot. What?
Well, you're English.
What do you want me to tell you about?
I don't understand Doctor Who. Why are there 17 of them or 18 of them or something?
There's 12 of them now. This is the 12th one.
Okay. So there's a lot of Doctor Who's. Mm-hmm. And they're all kind of scrawny English white guys.
They have typically all been English white guys, which is apparently part of the controversy these days, that some people would like to see a female or maybe a non-white doctor. But traditionally, that's who the Doctor Who started in the 1950s or 60s. And so, you know, it was pretty much all white.
He's an immortal Time Lord.
So, but
he's not technically immortal, but when he dies, he regenerates into a new body.
Like a pod person?
I don't know exactly but he's not human. He's from a planet called Gallifrey.
Okay.
And
I thought that was a place in England.
Among the Gallifreyans are these characters called Time Lords.
Okay.
Who are kind of like the cops.
So they're like
Watchmen
Green Lanterns
of the space-time continuum. And in the past, they were all wiped out in a big war. And
the Time Lords or the Gallifreyans?
The Time Lords.
Okay.
Actually, I think perhaps all the Gallifreyans. I'm not completely up on all
it's
the mythology.
Okay.
But certainly the Doctor Who, or just the Doctor, is really his name. He's not called Doctor Who. He's just called the Doctor.
What kind of doctor is he? Is he like a physicist or is he a medical doctor?
Well, I don't think that's ever been clarified. But given that he flies around space and time in a massive time machine, probably some kind of quantum physics.
Okay. But it's also a phone booth. Or a police box.
So here's one cool part of the mythology that I do know. And I always thought this was a nice touch. So it looks like a phone box from like the early 20th century in England.
And
those weren't public call boxes back then. They were just, you could go, they were for the use of the police to go in there and make a call before they had radios that they carried around with them. They just had whistles.
So it was like, I'm going to go to dispatch.
If they needed to
call
for backup or whatever, they would go to one of these public, one of these police call boxes and call in.
So that's why you could park that anywhere and nobody would hop into it, except for maybe a confused
body. Well, so what happened was the TARDIS, which is Doctor Who's time machine.
Okay.
Stands for time and relative dimension in space.
Okay, so it's both a traveling machine and a time machine.
It can travel anywhere in space and or time. So
instantly?
Pretty badass.
Man, that would have made that traffic. That makes the zipper merge.
If you had a TARDIS, you could have been here yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's bigger on the inside than the outside.
So the other cool thing is it looks like a call box on the outside, but once you step inside, it's vastly larger.
Well, but what if a cop steps inside to make a call?
Well, that wouldn't happen because only the doctor can get in. No, it won't open for anyone else.
And his companion.
And his companion.
Hold on, so explain the companion.
All right, so I'm not done with the TARDIS.
Okay, sorry. So it's a Tesseract.
The original idea of the TARDIS was that it had what was known as a chameleon circuit. So if it were to show up in medieval times, it would take on the form of like a medieval tent or a hut or something that looked like it belonged there.
Or like a big fiberglass rock.
Yes, or something that wouldn't draw attention to itself, so nobody would come knocking. They couldn't get in anyway. Some people do, and people have accidentally stumbled inside the TARDIS before. They're not supposed to, but...
Great plot points.
To prevent that from ever happening is you make it look like something you don't look twice at. And in the case of a police call box, obviously that's for the police and regular people wouldn't think to go in there. But the idea was that at some point on the Doctor's adventures, when the TARDIS was in the form of this police box, the chameleon circuit became damaged and it got stuck in that form and he's never been able to fix it.
Wow,
so now everywhere it goes, that's what it looks like.
So he's not that great an astrophysicist then.
Well, I mean, he's pretty smart, but I think it's either damaged beyond repair, and again, you know, all the Gallifreyans are dead. Like, he can't call tech support anymore. They're all gone.
He just can't be asked.
Yeah.
Okay.
What type of crimes did he solve?
Well, I mean, there's any number of evil people and alien species out there, like the Daleks and the Cybermen.
The Daleks are the trash
looking,
cans?
Constantly looking to fuck shit up. Yes, they're the trash cans.
With the plungers.
Yes.
Okay. We see them at Comic-Con a lot.
Yes. Very, very. They are basically kind of the biggest and most famous of all the
Doctors.
They're
pretty scary.
Enemies. Yeah. When I was a kid, I was terrified of them. They're not so scary now.
I used to be scared of Lou Ferrigno. I know what it's like.
So what else do you want to know?
So, in terms of the cultural relevance, I assume like the David Tennant reboot of Doctor the More the
Well,
Modern.
Christopher Eccleston came before David Tennant.
Okay,
there were many Doctors. So in the 50s when it first started, it started with William Hartnell. And I'll see if I can do more from the top of my head. But I bet
you
pull up the list.
You
can pull up the list. The list of the Doctors in order, and I will see if I can do them from memory.
Being a Boy Scout. You got to remember the 12 points of the Scout Law.
So they write the actors leaving the series into the fiction as he dies and regenerates as new actor.
Yes, when an actor wants to leave or time's up or they want to refresh the series. I mean, obviously, it was a plot point that was kind of invented to enable them to be able to move through.
It's very clever.
Different iterations. But, you know, even the current Doctor now is all the other ones. So whatever happened to William Hartnell back in the 1950s, he still has those memories. He just
looks like Dax.
He regenerates into a new body, but his spirit, brain, whatever, is the same guy.
Do the actors kind of act that way?
There's a different personality each time as well, but they have all the memories of the previous Doctors.
So it's like Dax.
They're all technically the same person.
Dax is
very
the Doctor.
Very much like a Trill.
Okay. So then the companion is just his saucy lady friend?
Usually a fruity, comely young lass.
Was she like a counterculture person
along the way.
In the old days?
What's that?
Was she there to represent the counterculture and get the kids involved?
There have been different, yeah. I mean,
okay.
So the Doctor, typically, the first Doctor, William Hartnell, was kind of a crotchety old man.
Okay.
And I don't know I think the Doctor, even from the William Hartnell, they always had these young companions.
Is the companion always the same person, or is it a different person?
No, it's always, he just picks up different people along the way.
So he like picks up a hitchhiker, basically.
Yeah, it's always just some young person that gets caught up in events, and then if the Doctor likes him, he says, "Hey, do you want to come with me?"
Okay,
and help me out, and so then he'll help him out for a while, and then they'll eventually go away or die, and then he'll pick up someone else.
And there's some legacy there too, like some of the companions are children of other companions and stuff like that.
I'm not sure if they've ever done that.
Okay,
but he's mostly had young female companions,
or they're the same person from different points in the timeline or something like that. I read a Wikipedia page once. I'm an expert.
So William Hartnell was the first.
That
one.
Is correct.
Then Patrick Troughton.
That is also correct.
Then John Pertwee.
Yep.
Tell us which one of your favorites. Like, rate them.
Then Tom Baker.
These guys only had like really short runs. Some of them. Like,
some of them were very short. Tom Baker ran for a long time. Everyone think basically it's like, you know how you think the music from your decade is the best music.
Yeah.
Tom Baker was the Doctor that I grew up on in the late. What was his run like? Late
74 to 81.
Right, so 74 to 81. That was, so I was 2 years old to 9 years old. So that was pretty much prime Doctor Who time for me.
He's a big curly haired dude.
Doctor Who. He was the guy with the really long scarf.
Yeah, yeah.
When you think of the Doctor, with all the Doctors that they've been, the Tom Baker Doctor is like the quintessential. That's the one that people remember.
So then,
he was almost everybody will agree.
He was the guy with the long scarf and the coat,
really long scarf and the sonic screwdriver and K9.
You know how
like in James Bond, like all the coolest shit you remember is all from Goldfinger? All the best James Bond stuff is actually from that one movie. All the coolest Doctor Who stuff is actually from the Tom Baker years.
So and they'll kill them in the middle of a series. So like it'll be like episode 6 of a series, he dies, and does the new Doctor come in that same episode?
I think in the past they could die at any time, but typically in the new generation, typically die at the end of and regenerate at the end of a season. So Tom Baker, who, again, 99% of people will tell you that's the best Doctor. Peter Davison.
That's correct.
Colin Baker.
No relation.
Wait, hold on.
Colin Baker is the sixth one. The Wikipedia entry says that there's a guy named Richard Herndell who replaces the first Doctor during the 20th anniversary special when all five Doctors appear. But
yeah, the five Doctors, probably non-canon. they couldn't get them all.
Yeah, because one of them had died.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. But that's kind of like counting David Niven in Casino Royale as James Bond, like technically, but like nobody really thinks of that.
Okay.
Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy.
Yep.
Paul McGann.
Yep.
Who was just in that one TV movie, but has to count because they saw him regenerate from Sylvester McCoy.
So they wasted a doctor on one bad
American TV movie. Yeah.
Oh, this is when they tried to bring it to America.
And then when they, I don't remember, but when they brought, but so that was the last one for a long time. And then Doctor Who kind of lay fallow for a long time, which always baffled me. I remember thinking, like, Doctor Who is like one of the best things the BBC's ever had. Why is it just sitting there? They did a poll for like which BBC show would you like to see brought back, and Doctor Who was like by far and away the winner. So they brought it back.
It was basically like from 1996 to 2005.
Yeah, for a long time it just sat there. And again, even before that, because the TV movie doesn't really, I mean, it does count, but it was just a one-off. It wasn't like it was really on television. Yeah. But it is technically part of the mythology. That bad Paul McGann TV movie opens with the Sylvester McCoy Doctor, dying. And he regenerates into Paul McCann.
Ah,
Does he die also and then get regenerated into the next one?
So Paul McCann, I can't remember how the TV movie ends. I think Paul McGann is still around, and then I don't remember. But I think when they brought the TV show back with Christopher Eccleston, I can't remember if they brought Paul McGann in to regenerate from him.
So this page does not list Paul McGann in the Christopher Eccleston reboot.
Okay, so they probably just never showed.
They probably died.
I think so. He regenerated off camera.
Yeah,
but Paul McGann is definitely one of the Doctors. Like he counts in the number.
All right, and in the modern,
like we're talking about the 12th Doctor now instead of the 11th because Paul McGann was one of those Doctors.
Okay, so that Paul McGann was the 8th Doctor.
Then Christopher Eccleston.
So 9, 10, 11 is then the modern era.
And everything from Christopher Eccleston on is the modern era. So Christopher Eccleston. David Tennant, who did it for quite a long time.
Yeah, like Christopher Eccleston was just a few months.
He only did it for one season and just wanted out.
And then Tennant was like 5 years.
And Tennant was the one that, in the modern age,
he's the one who is most, I think, beloved among the young people that don't really know the previous generations of Doctors.
He's the baker of the month.
And then Matt Smith, who was very popular, did it for a couple of years. And now Peter Capaldi, who... I haven't been watching Doctor Who terribly much because I don't like these trendy young Doctors. But Peter Capaldi, I think they're going back to the tradition of having like an older, you know, kind of more interesting Doctor.
Old white guy.
If you're familiar, anyone who's familiar with Peter Capaldi's work knows what a fantastic actor he is. I think he's going to be great.
How do you think he'll play it?
I who knows? I think he can very much do the eccentricity.
He was on The Thick of It, right?
Yeah. So best known as Malcolm Tucker from The Thick of It, which is one of the great
Tucker
TV characters.
The fucker.
Yeah, of the last 10 years. Have you seen the Doctor Who trailer where they use all the Malcolm Tucker clips?
The Quiet Bat People.
Yeah. Quiet Bat People.
Oh my god.
So you don't like the new Doctor Who's. I'm gonna ask this question of the audience, Joe. If you want to get started watching Doctor Who, you have no previous experience, should you just jump in with the Chris Ecclesworth stuff?
Eccleston.
Or do you think Eccleston? Or do you think you should go all the way back to your boy with
the scarf?
It's
tough to say. People were very divided on... I personally did not like the Christopher Eccleston Doctor Who. It felt like the least Doctor Who of all of them.
Like what's... Okay, so...
But that's if Stephen Moffat.
All of the...
What's the defining characteristic of Doctor Who? Like if Star Trek is about a utopian future, you know, and Star Wars is just a space opera, what's the Doctor Who... Like what's the overall?
So the Doctor through all his incarnations, and again, this is where I think the Christopher Eccleston one kind of missed it because he tried to ground him a bit more. The part of the fun of the Doctor is he's a bit mad, you know. He's this kind of wildly eccentric genius,
like fish out of water kind of thing, or just mad, just crazy,
just a bit nuts.
Okay,
he's very eccentric, very kind
of. He's been doing it for so long.
Very wacky, but extremely smart. Obviously, I mean, he's a science genius, and has been around forever. But there is this dark side because, you know, there's actually the one episode of the Christopher Eccleston series where they finally bring back the Daleks because they waited. They didn't want to bring the Daleks back right away. They were trying to save in that. So like midway through the Christopher Eccleston series, they did the episode where the Daleks come back. And that's actually a really good episode because it's really dark and you realize just how much it's easy to laugh at the Daleks because, you know, they do look kind of like they do look a bit silly. But they are in the mythology of Doctor Who.
Terrifying.
I mean, they're really powerful. They're kind of like the Borg.
Okay.
They're Doctor Who's version of the Borg. All they want to do is destroy fucking everything and conquer everything all the time. And they're completely remorseless. And they're led by this guy called Davros, who is kind of half human, half Dalek. And he's all fucked up. This is why Tom Baker was the best one, because he was never afraid even of Davros. I still, as a kid, remember this great moment where Davros explains at length his plans for the Daleks to take over the universe, and Doctor Who responds by just saying, "Have a jelly baby," because he used to eat jelly babies, and it would frustrate Davros because he wouldn't take him seriously.
Like living forever is not. It seems like it'd be nice until you think about it a little bit. But everybody he's ever known
died. This is what I think mythologically they have to figure out something here, because technically I believe the Doctor is only supposed to be able to regenerate 12 times.
Oh, so this is it.
He's like a cat that's used up all his 9 lives. So I think they'll obviously, as long as Doctor Who continues to make huge amounts of money for the BBC, which it certainly is doing.
And it's the writers and
they will find a way around that.
Of the Sherlock show, Stephen Moffat.
Stephen Moffat. So it was Russell T. Davis that first brought Doctor Who back in the modern era. Yeah. And then he left and Stephen Moffat came in and has continued under him.
I think the most I've seen of Doctor Who is that guest cameo they had in Extras, where Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, he played a Doctor Who villain.
He plays a villain, and then David Tennant does that corny line about, like, I'm using these common ingredients, otherwise known as salt or something.
Yeah. Because he's a giant space slug.
Yeah, of course.
So is that the tone of the show?
Well, they're doing... Yeah, I mean, it's like... there are times when the show is legitimately dark and scary. I mean, like, again, as a kid, it was well known. I mean, this is a kind of a famous thing in the UK, that if you grew up in, like, the 70s or 80s, you watched Doctor Who, like, hiding behind the sofa, because it was the Daleks were fucking scary.
Yeah.
Really scary.
Yeah.
And again, you look at it now. This is why you're asking me, like, how would you go back? Like, I would say technically the Tom Baker Doctor is the best one ever. But if you go back and look at those shows, you know, the walls are kind of on the verge of collapsing at any given moment.
It looks like a soundstage.
You can go back and watch episodes of Doctor Who that were written by Douglas Adams.
I know.
Wow.
Well, and there's a whole secret episode that never aired, and there's all sorts of, because he worked on that along with Pythons. There were Pythons.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard
too,
to get.
Right?
It's very hard to get an unbiased view. Everyone likes. Again, I was fortunate to be born into an era where Tom Baker was the Doctor, because again, most unbiased Doctor Who fans will tell you that was the greatest one ever. I personally also liked Sylvester McCoy, Colin Baker. I can do it for William Hartnell, Patrick Troughton, both very well liked. They were kind of darker and more serious doctors, but again, black and white, very, very crusty special effects, kind of hard to engage with.
But
John Pertwee was the first one that kind of brought the eccentricity to it, I think. Tom Baker just
his name's Pertwee, of course he's going to be eccentric.
Tom Baker, absolutely golden age.
Yeah,
just the best that Doctor Who's ever been. Peter Davidson, who followed, somewhat well liked, but you know, anyone following. Kind of the Roger Moore, like good in his own way, but coming. But how do you follow Sean Connery? It was that kind of vibe. He was good. I liked him. Colin Baker hated to shit. Just probably one of the worst doctors.
Killed
ever.
Doctor Who.
Tried to be too much like, I think, because he's I'm Baker. Tom Baker just tried to be too much like the Tom Baker Doctor, and he just didn't have it.
Like karaoke, bad karaoke.
Sylvester McCoy, I actually thought was a very good choice. So people are very mixed on Sylvester McCoy, but he definitely brought the wackiness. He used to play the spoons. I remembered that. Sylvester McCoy could actually play this. I mean, if you even know what playing the spoons is.
Yeah, you bang them together and make
you have two
beat.
Spoons
yeah,
back
yeah.
to back, and you actually can make a very interesting percussion instrument if you know how to do it. That's just a skill that he had. And so he brought that, and the Doctor would do it. So Sylvester McCoy, very good. Paul McGann, again, just one movie. Tried to do the... It was kind of okay. It was all right for what it was.
One movie isn't enough time to know if he's good or bad.
Eccleston, I think, fell totally flat.
Okay.
Refused to be wacky. Just walked around like just like a black leather jacket and jeans. He just looked like the dude that ran, you know, the corner shop. He didn't look like the Doctor at all. Doctor Who, everyone has had like a very distinctive, you know, sartorial style.
No one cosplays as that guy.
Well, yeah, you can always tell like which Doctor is which.
It's the Ford Prefect joke. He's a fish. He's kind of a fish out of water, right?
He doesn't really know how to fit in.
Yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
A lot of them are.
So the new ones certainly are. I don't know if the older ones are.
Enjoy the new stuff.
What do you guys... Let us know what you think.
David Tennant and Matt Smith were both very well liked. Mm-hmm. And I think Peter Capaldi potentially could be one of the greatest ones.
Just based on
his strengths as an actor. And I think he's very well suited to the role.
Can't wait to hear what Dan Stapleton says about this, because he's a big fan also.
I think we should play the music and talk about what we've been testing.
All right.
I'm kind of dreading now the number of correct, because I'm sure I got like 20. 90% of what I said about Doctor Who was accurate, but I probably got a few things wrong, and I'm going to get some grief. I'm not a hardcore Whovian.
Gary's Twitter address is @GaryWitta, and you can send him feedback there.
But I bet you I have more people backing me up on my opinions of
you
Tom
did pretty
Baker
well. I feel like you like from what little I know of Doctor Who, I feel like you hit the high points there.
Doctor Tom Baker had the sonic screwdriver, which has been brought back again and again.
Yeah,
he had K9, which I don't think they ever have brought back.
Is it a robot dog?
It's a robot dog.
Mm. Yeah, it didn't work on Battlestar much
I like
either.
K10.
What's K10?
That's the South Park Cat spoof on
dog.
K9.
Really?
K10.
Huh. Yeah.
In the Alan Partridge mythology, Alan Partridge buys the rights to K9, which are separate to Doctor Who.
What's Alan Partridge?
Oh, let's not go down that road.
Okay,
we'll do that one off the
road. Okay,
have you never seen any Alan Partridge? Oh my goodness, you're missing out.
Oh, the radio thing. Yeah, of course.
Aha!
Steve Coogan.
You never seen that?
No.
It's coming back as a movie.
Yeah, it's not being shown here, which I'm very disappointed by.
Mm. you'll be able to get it.
I'll lend you a couple of my Alan Partridge DVDs, and you can enjoy
more
them.
Stuff that I can not have time to watch. Yeah. But yes,
yeah, because then I'll lend you the whole run of the thick of it, and you haven't watched any of it.
I watched the first like 10 minutes of the first episode, and there's inertia that fights against English comedy in my house. The baby doesn't like it.
It's a shame. Norm appreciates it.
I know. I like the UK office. Fine. It was great. What we've been testing. You want to check in with the Nexus 7, Norm?
Sure.
Still good?
The first one you had a dead pixel, right?
The first one had a whole row of dead pixels.
That's not good.
A whole column.
Fixed it in like 2 days.
Yeah. Amazon fixed it in two days.
And it is a lovely tablet. I was just playing it for the first time today. I love the fact that because it's so elongated, like it's very narrow.
Yeah.
That it's very unlike even the iPad Mini, even that is kind of a stretch just to hold.
You still hold it with your thumb.
And like, but to like hold it like that.
You mean
like
do a C grip around the
edges.
With
your hand all the way across the back. You can't really do that with a Mini, but with this lends itself very well to that.
Because it's 1610. A lot of the iPad proponents, Mini proponents, think that that's still not good enough. They want the aspect ratio of the iPad.
I like the aspect ratio of the iPad. The big thing for me is the brightness control, although there are third-party softwares that you can use too.
And really so nice, really nice screen, very tall, snappy, good performance.
Big forehead, big chin.
Yeah. It's the Jay Leno of tablets.
If somebody was saying to me, I'm in the market for a tablet, you know, the knee jerk used to be, well, obviously just get an iPad. This is the first time that I think you'd have to say, well, okay, let's think about this. What do you want to do here?
Because
that's a very, very legitimate contender.
The big difference to me is the games, and the game situation on Android is much better than it has been when I previously
used
Android.
The app ecosystem is still the number one reason to get an iPad.
It's fine. If you're using Android, you're fine. Like, it's good. The stuff there is good stuff there.
But the price point on this
are things like Tweetbot and iOS exclusives.
I think this is the first, you know, I hesitate to say iPad killer because the iPad's not going anywhere, but the first really legitimate rival.
Don't say iPad killer.
I'm never going to say
iPad killer. I spent a lot of time with the Oculus this week.
I'm jealous. I wish I had one.
So I went through and downloaded about 50 or 60 of the shipping tech demos, experiences.
What are the best ones?
Well, we're going to do a video.
Okay. How do you possibly communicate that in a video?
Well,
you can pipe it.
Yeah, so we pipe one screen out, and then there's a shot of like Norm and me and whoever else is.
But I've seen what the screen output looks like, and it doesn't even come close to what
you have to use words. You know.
Yeah, you have to paint a word picture.
High points are the more polished stuff. So I played Half-Life 2, a fair amount of Half-Life 2, which I haven't played in a long time.
Mm. I definitely want to try that.
It's official now. They like that you do VR on the there's a beta that you can install.
Gotta check that out.
I was really bummed that Euro Truck Simulator doesn't support it yet, because that seems like it would be perfect, because you can kind of look left and right over your shoulders, check your corners, stuff like that.
There's so many applications for it.
Lunar Flight, which is a indie game that kind of seems like you're flying like a LEM, like a lunar lander, but it's actually a updated version. It's about cargo hauling and fighting and stuff like that. Is awesome.
I really want to try that FPS that the Eve guys have come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's out yet. The dust thing.
It's only at conventions.
But the idea that you steer the ship with the sticks, right? But then you've got free look around the cockpit.
Yeah, so
really cool.
So the stuff that has been best so far, Lunar Flight and a couple of the other demos that I won't get into, are things that literally you're inside a cockpit. Your position is relatively fixed. And you use your head to look at different screens inside the cockpit.
What's the ISS demo?
So there's a couple of space things that are pretty good. One is called Spacewalk, and it is literally just like you leaving an airlock on the ISS.
Oh, can you imagine gravity?
It's very
Oculus Rift mode.
It's similar.
That is because you have to use your propulsion.
This is going to change everything. I've said this so many times, and it sounds like hyperbole to everyone except other people that have put the goggles on. It is nothing short of revelatory. It's the most impressive I've ever been by anything.
So even after spending a
revelatory.
Lot of time.
Revelatory.
I'm not going to get into this. It's a trap.
This is where we're going to have to be opposed, because it's.
There's still a real hard time limit on the amount of time that people can play. And the motion, the nausea stuff, like it affects different people dramatically differently.
Yeah.
So like I can go for a really long time. Even for a really long time is still only like 4 hours before a combination of like eye strain and kind of mild.
Well, I mean, it's like you probably shouldn't be playing any game even in front of a regular flat panel for more than 4 hours at a time.
It's easy for us to say because we have kids, and it's not realistic that we're ever going to get to play games for 4 hours at a time again. But most of the people I know that would be interested in buying a $300 set of VR goggles are not going to be stoked about having to take breaks. when you're playing a game.
It's probably best that you
I understand. I agree.
Particularly
yes.
as we get into like holodeck addiction and that whole rabbit hole, because people are, you know,
I'm so chafed.
This is Ready Player One. This is Surrogates. People are not going to want to take these things off. They're going to live. They're just going to sit
All
there
we need
getting
is the
bed sores
telepresence
in their
machine.
Chair.
I need a food pipe.
Yeah. Telepresence machine and that's it.
Yeah,
it's Idiocracy. You have the recliner with the toilet.
Have
in
you
it.
Seen that new the trailer for that Spike Jonze movie?
Yeah,
the one where she falls in love with Siri and it's
he falls in love with Scarlett Johansson being his computer.
I liked it better when it was called Electric Dreams.
Was it called Electric Dreams? Oh,
in the is BS, it a yes. Philip K. Dick reference?
No.
What's Electric
Dreams? Do you not remember that movie?
No. We're discovering all sorts of holes in my pop culture.
So in the 1980s, when the idea of having a computer in your house was science fiction,
yeah,
there was this movie called Electric Dreams. You don't remember the themes music with Giorgio Moroder?
No.
Together in Electric Dreams? Oh my God, you guys missed out.
Sorry.
Do you know
he
about put,
so he goes to a born. Store and he buys a computer and puts it in his house and he wires up everything in his house to it so it controls the house.
Okay.
And there's a, you know, AI personality in there, this female. And, you know, it starts messing with his life and gets jealous. He brings a girl home and the computer gets jealous of the woman that he's brought home. It's, you know.
Weird.
This is basically that, but I presumably done properly because we actually now understand what computers are capable of.
I don't think it's done properly. I think it's still.
It'll be a fantastical journey through love and digital Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
parody.
There is a ton of neat stuff out there, and seeing what people who have limited resources have created has also brought into sharp relief the difference between like a good Oculus implementation and a bad Oculus implementation.
Do they?
Because some of these things you put on and just immediately feel nauseous if the movement isn't exactly right. It is a
I consider myself very fortunate in the time that I spent with one. I didn't have any kind of adverse reaction.
It usually for me it takes 20 or 30 minutes on most stuff. Although when you have things where your perspective is changing and it's not in sync with your head, like it gets real bad real fast. I can show you a thing that will make you feel bad within moments of putting it on. Yeah. Show you a lot of stuff that'll make you feel bad within moments.
No doubt.
Along with that, I also tested out the Razer Hydra.
What's that?
So it is I don't have the controllers here, but it is a
– Is that the thing with the two sticks down there?
It's the thing with the two sticks, and it uses magnets, an electrical field to determine orientation. And so far, it's been a complete piece of shit that just doesn't work.
Yeah. It came out
about right
when Portal came out, and
it came out a year after Portal came out.
No one's really cared.
Yeah, it's
about
not
it.
Been good. I'm going to RMA this one and get another one that hopefully isn't broken.
You know what? I'm interested to try is that Disney thing that lets you feel objects with like directional puffs of air. Did you see that?
I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That sounds.
You create the illusion of like sensory touch.
That's interesting.
In just with very kind of highly directed. Jets,
sounds very cool.
Air jets.
Haptic. Yeah. Air puffs.
Yeah. We also tested the Leap Motion. You took it home, Norm. Did you get to try it?
Yes, I've installed a bunch of stuff on it. Still in the process of testing.
I have had really hard. So the Leap Motion is the thing. It's a little square box that you put in front of your monitor, and
it's Kinect, right? But just much more.
Yeah, no.
It's IR sensor from bottom up. The field is about.
It's kind of like the U-Force.
2 feet wide, but you have to be very precise. Over it.
It makes a field in front of your monitor that you can do touch stuff, gestural stuff into.
Right.
My problem is that if you have overhead lighting or anything reflective on the ceiling, it doesn't work. So like over our desks here at the office where there's these air ducts, it's fucking useless.
Oh, okay.
At my house, it was okay. But I found it really weird to hold your hands up in space.
All right.
They're very tiring.
Let's see. XSplit. I've been experimenting with streaming games because that stuff's really easy to use now. There's a couple of different software options that I've been testing that stuff out, so we'll write it up.
What's the best one?
Well, XSplit's great, but you have to pay for it, and it's like an annual subscription.
What
it's like 20
open
bucks a year.
Orp
one? UBS is the one.
Yeah, UBS.
Or UB something. I installed that last night and had trouble getting it to work. I'm going to mess around with it a little bit more.
I think that's the one that people love the most.
I mean, there's a free versus $30 a year is pretty compelling.
$30 a year.
And then the other option, the nice thing about XSplit is it lets you do things like integrate a camera and additional inputs and stuff like that. So there's pros and cons to each. It depends on how serious you are about it. Do you want to take some questions?
Oh, wait, I want to talk about testing.
Oh, what have you been testing?
Well, because I just wanted to say I read Norm's review of the Chromecast.
Yeah.
Which I thought was good.
Have you been testing it?
I mean, I didn't think the Chromecast was good. I you know, after the initial hype of it, I thought it was, you know, so, I kind of looked at that going, this doesn't seem as good as people are making out. And then I read Norm's review and it kind of highlighted all the
reasons that
I was wary about it.
Because I've had a little bit of a different experience with the tab streaming than you have.
Yeah, tab streaming shit.
I had an okay experience with tab streaming.
Is this something you want to use? Like AirPlay, compared to AirPlay, because AirPlay is the AirPlay mirroring.
I don't ever use AirPlay mirroring because the performance
is terrible.
It
mirrors what's in Chrome? Is that correct?
What's that?
It doesn't fully mirror your desktop.
You can
mirror what's in Chrome.
There's an experimental mode that lets you mirror your desktop, and that's even worse.
That was really bad.
Yeah.
But the tab mirroring I used to play full tab video, like HBO Go video or something like that, and that worked fine.
And none of that is blocked?
There's no way for them to really block it that we can tell. It seems like there isn't.
Tab stream right now is a way for people to get around the Chromecast not being implemented in the video provider services, including dropping files in and using HBO Go. But
the video quality is much worse. Like,
it is not
much worse than an HDMI cable, obviously. But it's even worse than AirPlay mirroring, which is bad. Like, I find the AirPlay mirroring to be almost
AirPlay
useless.
Mirroring is great when it works.
I don't know.
It's very spotty.
You can't call it Chromecast tab.
Well, so the thing is good. The thing I was going to say was that the tab syncing worked okay on a wired machine.
I did on a wired machine.
Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi was rough. Like, Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi was
which,
was
let's face it,
bad.
That's how most people are going to be using it. They're going to be streaming from a laptop or a device, like a phone or a tablet that's Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and the problem with doing wired to wireless is that you have to probably be in another room, and it's not a good experience. Like you said, the use case for this is, hey, I have something cool on my laptop or tablet. Let me show you.
Yep.
And it goes from there. And I also couldn't figure out how to get Chrome on iOS to stream. I don't know if that's impossible.
That.
I assume not.
I mean, again, given that I already have that through AirPlay, we have Apple TVs and all the TVs in the house. Like,
but
already have that.
I mean, $35 is pretty compelling.
No, don't get that's not compelling.
The fact that it's cheap does not excuse the fact that it's not that
great. The point.
The Netflix streaming is fine
if you have a good Wi-Fi connection.
Well,
and also you got to remember
you have really bad Wi-Fi.
The other thing you got to remember is that whenever you're doing that,
not bad Wi-Fi.
You got to remember that whenever you're doing that, you're killing the battery on whatever device you're streaming from as well. But you better make sure that your phone or whatever
that's
runs
not
on
the way
background. It's because it's not streaming, but you have to still have it on, and there is a process that runs in the background.
Yeah. Right.
So it is using more than if the phone was just off. So yeah, you're right.
And the video that you're streaming is going to be lower resolution than if you're using something native.
It's not a good way to get video up on the TV. You can do it, but I wouldn't watch like an HD movie.
Here's the thing that I think is interesting is that by coming out at $35, they're going to apply pressure to the Rokus and the Apple TVs. Not that Apple has ever acknowledged pricing pressure on anything, but we will see cheaper options for video streaming in the
future.
That's
great. The other point that Norm made, which is often overlooked, is that HDMI ports are a commodity in themselves.
That is absolutely true. Even if you have an expensive TV with like four HDMI ports,
Hoping that over time this all condense down. I think it will with some of the new technology. But I had to shop around a long time to find a receiver that had six HDMI ports because that's how many I needed. I think with the next gen consoles, I'm thinking about maybe streaming. Doing the HDMI in on the Xbox for the TV stuff, maybe.
That seems crazy.
I don't know.
I'll try it, but I'm not optimistic.
But most people aren't. I would guess that probably 90% of people that have an HDTV are not using a receiver. They're just pumping the sound through their TV and using whatever HDMI ports the TV has. And at the high end, you're looking at four at the most. Most HDTVs come with two HDMI ports.
Well, and if you're using something like a soundbar,
and both of those are probably already in use.
And if you're using something like a soundbar, then they have limited HDMI ports in the whole. It's a mess.
And you got to plug in power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless it's 1.4, which again, a lot of lower end TVs are not going to be.
Well, I think most TVs have USB ports now, right?
Yeah, but that's just another.
I know it's another wire dangling
cable
off the side. Anything else we've been testing? We want to talk about?
I bought an AirPort Express. To extend my Wi-Fi network.
How's
this is not very exciting, but I've not been thrilled with the Wi-Fi reception from where the router is down to some of my TV stuff. In the old house, I had a wired cable that we're able to run.
Yeah.
It's not as easy to do that in the new house. I'm very envious of people that have, like Norm, that have Ethernet just run all the way through the house.
Well, it's easy to do if you have a crawl space, too. If you're single. Like we did in our house, it was no big deal.
We're not. It's not as easy for
us.
No,
I know.
So I tried to we added on another transmitter.
So what was the what did you use it put in like repeat? I haven't used an AirPort Express in years. Does it have a repeater mode, or did you have to run an Ethernet cable to it and then plug it in the wall someplace?
So the idea of like having it go from having it pick up a Wi-Fi signal and rebroadcast it is terrible. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, that's bad
for all kinds of reasons. That doesn't work.
Good. Okay.
So I ran. What I did was I plugged in an Ethernet cable from the time capsule, the router, to the AirPort Express.
And moved the AirPort Express someplace else?
To another place in the house where it can rebroadcast.
Okay.
And that signal obviously is as good because it's coming from a wired connection.
Yeah.
And that actually has improved things somewhat, but it's still not as good as I would want it to be. Mm. Ideally, you want wires running to everything.
I'm kind of surprised that that house doesn't have wires. I would have expected maybe it would.
No, it's not new enough for that. And
the other thing that you could do is do a power line.
I've used it. Don't like it.
When did you use it?
I've had very mixed luck with power line.
Well, but that changes on a house by house basis.
Yes, I know, but I'm just not willing to do it again. It's a hassle.
Okay,
it's a real crap.
Do you still have the old one?
Or did you return it? No, I threw it away.
Oh wow!
I know. I was so annoyed with my old power line. I threw it away, and then I wish I'd have kept it because I could have tried it again. But so I'm looking at various things. There might still be a possibility to run a cable somehow. I need to look at it. But that's really
the router solution. Is it possible to put the router in someplace else?
Well,
that's the other thing you can do.
I'm also thinking about maybe just seeing if there's just a better router that I could get.
You use an AirPort.
I have a time capsule.
A time capsule. They're not very good.
No. I'm wondering if I should just – but I like the fact that it's also my backup drive. But I could just run a backup drive separately.
Well, you can also use the time capsule on your network without using it as an access point.
Right.
So.
Right.
Or you could use it as an extender for your access
point. So, you know, maybe looking at – you know, trying to find another router out there that might have better range.
There you go. Is it a 5.8 or just 2.4?
It's both. Time capsule is dual band.
Depends on – well, there's older ones that aren't, I think.
This is dual band.
Okay.
I was thinking about maybe getting the new one that just came out that has AC and it's totally future-proofed, but I don't think it would make much of a difference.
And Apple has traditionally not been awesome at antennas.
Right.
You know, if you look at like MacBook Wi-Fi reception versus other laptop Wi-Fi reception, they're not real awesome.
Yeah.
I guess that's it for what we've been testing. You want to do some questions? Questions?
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom. If you have a question for This Is Only Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep your questions short, under 45 seconds. Or you can send written questions and we will maybe read them on the air if they are good. Here is our first question.
Hey, Tested crew. This is Jason from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, the hometown of fantasy author Patrick Rothfuss. We were also recently awarded the best municipal tap water by an industry group in the nation. My question is, what are some creature comforts, technology or otherwise, that you enjoy so much you would rather go without than deal with an inferior version? Some easy examples off the top of my head would be coffee, beer, and watching sports in anything other than HD, other than my Packers, of course, which I will watch however I can. Thanks. Keep on testing.
I've kind of gotten that way about food. Like, if something isn't pretty awesome and it's bad for you, I just don't eat it. I'd rather have nothing than something shitty and bad for you.
Not surprised.
What?
I mean, mediocre food's fine. I mean,
mediocre healthy food is what different. Like,
I think there's a difference between needing the best of something and you never want to settle for anything in that case, right?
Yeah, you eat three times a day and your meals should be good. Or eat something healthy and shitty is the way I look at it. If I'm going to eat shitty food, it'd at least be healthy, shitty food.
That's, you know me, I'm the opposite. I'll eat anything.
That's
true. Even on coffee, I briefly dabbled with being kind of a coffee snob like you for a while, but now I've just slipped back into it. Like, I just bought a big tub of Maxwell House the other day. Fuck it. But because I got into cold, so I saw a really simple recipe online for cold brewing coffee. You just dump some coffee and some water in a big jar, big receptacle, let it refrigerate, you know, for 10 hours or overnight.
24 is
and then
usually recommended.
Run it through a filter.
Yep.
And you're all good. Yep. But the recipe that I used calls for, you go through coffee quite quickly. So I just bought a big thing of cheap coffee to make. So that's my iced coffee.
I would, for iced, I'd do Chock Full of Nuts.
Well, I did get some more Chock Full of the first batch that I made was with Chock Full of Nuts, and it was very good.
You're going to be much more happy with that than
I made a Max, and I got some more Chock Full of Nuts the other day. There's only one place in the city where I can get it. It's kind of a hassle.
It is a pain in the ass.
So I bought some Max One House
Amazon
to give it a try.
Get your chocolate nuts from Amazon.
I love chocolate nuts. Are like my favorite coffee now. It's so good.
As canned mass market coffees go, it is the bomb.
It is really good.
Especially if you get the beans and grind it yourself.
Yeah.
Always get the beans and grind it.
They had
yourself.
Dunkin' Donuts whole beans at the store the other day on special offer half price. So I bagged some of those as well.
So my rule on coffee
is.
See,
they're bringing Dunkin' Donuts to the West Coast?
I don't care. I don't like Dunkin' Donuts
very much. That's everything that's wrong about you in that statement, right?
They're just normal donuts. That's the kind of donut I grew up with. They're nothing special.
You're right. But the coffee is actually pretty good. And they have some have some unique items that are pretty amazing, like their Texas toast breakfast sandwich. That shit is the bomb.
Don't they make a hamburger that's a donut on either side or something?
Probably.
Seems like
I would bat an eyelid if I saw that.
I think the reason Dunkin' Donuts coffee is good.
Seriously, we have reached a point now. It's like the last days of the Roman Empire where you can walk into a Dunkin' Donuts and they could literally have like two whole fried chickens inside a bun that is made of human meat and you would just go, yeah. Seems about right. That's the next step.
You've seen this.
What's left?
You've seen This Is Why You're Fat, right? It's a tumbler.
Yes.
Have you seen the Morios?
Yes.
Which are the individual cookies and filling, and you can choose your own ratio.
Yeah, but somebody just made those themselves. That was just someone on Reddit that did that, right? That's not like a commercial product.
I don't know. I would buy that product. Wouldn't you?
I think Pop-Tarts are the worst.
Pop-Tarts are pretty bad.
For the market penetration that they have, and then you look at how bad they are for you, and they're not even that good, that's the exact kind of thing we're talking about here.
Yeah, like my basic policy is, I'll eat something that's bad for me if it's awesome, but if it's shitty and bad for me, avoid, and then eat something healthy instead.
I picked up, what did I pick up the other day? I picked up something at the supermarket that looked kind of good, but I looked at the stats and I'm like, you know what? I do allow myself to eat a certain amount of shit.
Yeah, of course.
You know, because I think you have to. Otherwise you just kill yourself if you can't ever, you know, enjoy a chicken and a biscuit every now and again. But if I'm going to eat shit, I want it to be shit. If you eat the stuff that you know is bad for you, it's not even that good, then you just end up feeling horrible. You're like, what was that even for?
You know, if you're
and a Pop-Tart is pretty much the embodiment of that.
You just never feel good after eating a Pop-Tart. It's like eating McDonald's. This doesn't.
I feel okay about eating McDonald's.
Yeah.
Except for the McRib. I always feel guilty after eating a McRib.
You know, I had the Burger King McRib. You haven't been on so long. We didn't get to talk about this. I ate one of the Burger King McRibs because I was in a Burger King situation.
Yeah.
They came out with their Ribwich or whatever it's called. It was really, really bad.
Yeah.
It was not a good sandwich. It wasn't slathered in the sauce. It had a pickle and some grilled onions. I immediately regretted eating that.
Burger King is like the knockoff. Like they've tried to copy everything, but they just don't do it as well.
They have a better chicken sandwich.
Yeah, I think their burgers are better.
Their chicken sandwich is all right.
Their burgers at least taste like
but
they have the texture
just,
of meat.
It's just not a good burger.
It's like a delicious burger. It has lettuce and tomato, onions,
it's
mayonnaise.
It's not a good burger. My new favorite burger is the Big Carl at Carl's Jr. That's a good burger.
I can't do Carl's Jr. Now, I'll go to Hardee's and get biscuits.
That's Carl's Jr.
They don't do the biscuits at Carl's Jr.'s, only at Hardee's. It's a real bummer. Did you see the bacon taco where the shell is a slice of bacon that has been fried in the shape of a taco shell? It's called the Baco.
Is it ham?
I'm thinking about going and checking out Five Guys.
Bacon.
I put a question up on Twitter a couple of weeks ago about Five Guys, and it was the most divisive thing I think I've ever posted.
It's okay.
It doesn't seem like it'd be like 50 million calories, and like I just don't feel good about
it. It's for volume eaters. So this is one of the things we've...
Everyone said get the small fry because it's like a sack of fries. It is. It's just ridiculous.
You can share a small fry with three people.
They put the thing of fries in your bag and then pour more fries in the bag. Because they know that people like the fries that spill over.
And
the cheat fries.
The burgers come out in like a kind of glutinous chunk of cheese and bacon and meat and bread.
We went to In-N-Out the other day because we realized that we live close to In-N-Out. Like, why the fuck are we not going there?
Secret of that In-N-Out is to always get the fries light well because they undercook them there.
I like the fries. In-N-Out fries are very divisive, but I like them a lot.
If you eat the fries in the store, they're okay. If you want to take them with you to home, then you got to get them cooked more. Should we, I don't have any more questions. I only had one this week.
I should say, since the guy brought it up, very big fan of Patrick Rothfuss. His books are like, whenever people say to me just randomly, like, give me a recommendation on a book. Like, that's my go-to recommendation every time.
I feel like I told this story before, but when I met him at Woodstock last year, I completely like fanboyed out and almost squeed.
Yeah.
And I was just like, your books are fantasy books are usually really bad, and yours are good for
the
books,
best.
Not
they're
just
so
fantasy
well
books.
Written. I mean, it's like a masterclass in how to write prose.
It's really, they're phenomenal.
My friend Eric is the guy who's now going to adapt it as a TV series.
Well, he better not fuck it up.
I'm sure he won't. He's a big fan of the books. I'm sure he's going to do it right.
Yeah, books are gorgeous.
Yeah, but read some people know what we're talking about. The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss, and then once you've read that, you'll want to read The Wise Man's Fear. And he's working on the third book now.
He announced that at Woodstock.
He announced it at Woodstock, yes. Yeah. And he read his children's book, too, which was pretty dark and fucked up.
Yeah, I've got his... He sent me a copy of his children's book. It's really cool.
Patrick did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
I've corresponded with him a little bit.
Oh, okay. The thing that I would do that for is coffee. I don't. If the coffee is shit, I just don't bother.
We kind of knew that already. And really, most things that you can put in your face, you're very particular.
Not that. I mean, food.
Yeah, you are.
I'll try anything on food.
You won't try anything.
I have tried many things. But, I'm not going to go back for more if it's no good.
Well, it's two sides of the coin. If you can eat really well.
Would you try the Taco Bell breakfast waffle taco?
Probably. I've eaten a fair number of... I've eaten more Doritos tacos than I care to admit.
Oh, those are good. Have you seen now that the circle has come full around now? They've got Doritos Doritos.
And no, taco-flavored Doritos were a thing. You could get taco-flavored Doritos when I was a kid.
But it's not taco-flavored. It's Doritos tacos.
Dorito tacos flavored Doritos. It's like it's like Street Fighter, the game of the movie of the game. Like it's just gone completely incepted.
I think it's the shells bigger.
Yeah, and you get both flavors. You get the
Cool Ranch,
the cool ranch and the nacho cheese.
I love that. That is a... The only thing that they could do to make that better is make Frito taco shells.
Fuck, man, I want some Cool Ranch Doritos tacos right now.
I would totally go
get
some.
I wish that they would... I don't want to live in a police state or a nanny state, but I do to some extent wish that they would ban fast food ads after 9 o'clock at night. Because I'm sitting there and I'm like, I could kind of snack on something now, but I probably shouldn't. And, it's like the Harold and Kumar thing. You're 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. Come to Taco Bell and eat this fucking thing, and you're like, oh, that does actually look good. And then you're fucking hungry. You weren't hungry 30 seconds ago.
Nope. The only time Jack in the Box ever seems like a good idea is like 11:30 at night when you're watching Letterman or Fallon or something, and you're like, oh man, I could totally go for like six shitty
tacos. It's only the fact that that shit is so, like, it would be a real hassle to like go get it. But if there was like a Taco Bell on the corner of my street,
it's a 10-minute walk to Taco Bell from my house. It's really bad.
When I first moved to San Francisco, a friend of mine looked at an apartment that was above a Boston Market, and we were like, this is both the best. I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, you would have died.
I would have died of chicken.
Because that food is cheap and it's good and it's really, really bad.
They started doing ribs at Boston Market now, too. You can get a rib and chicken combo.
And when Gina used to travel a lot, I would go to Boston Market and buy like two chickens and a quart of mashed potatoes and eat for 4 days probably.
That is good chicken.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
I guess that'll do it for us this week. We got a ton of great stuff on the site. Comic-Con stuff is coming up. We it's Geek Week, by the way. Hey, happy...
That kind of pass. I keep seeing that, but like, what does that really mean? What is
so
Geek Week?
Google and YouTube.
Is that a YouTube thing?
YouTube thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
They bought a ton of...
Oh, we should have talked about that Shark Week controversy.
The Megalodon?
Yeah, the Megalodon.
Let's save that for Fake Out. We'll talk about Geek Week and the Shark Week and do a quick Fake Out takes because Norm has to go. Today's outro. If you want to do an outro, by the way, for us, we're running low. Shadow Light did this one. Google raw outro song file. The instructions for editing it and putting it together with Audacity or something like that are on there. You upload it to SoundCloud. When you upload it to SoundCloud, make sure you check the download button or else I can't download it and use it for the podcast. But today's outro is brought to you by Shadow Light, and it features Wesley Fenlon.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
Long, but in terms, it's not so wide that, like, I've actually had other ones that it's problematic when you're trying to plug in.
I'm going to make a prediction.
Yeah.
And my prediction is that your quote from earlier, where you said, I can show you something that would make you unhappy almost immediately.
You think that's
probably wind up in an outro song.
I can see that. We were going to talk about
Geek Week is so this is like Comedy Week that YouTube.
It is the same idea.
Weeks now, okay.
And basically, what they do is they say, "Hey, if you pitch ideas to us, if we like them, then we will promote them on our Geek Week page." And because they promote that Geek Week page all across YouTube, it gives you a better chance of having like viral success on. I air quoted that, by the way, if you're listening to the audio version, viral success on videos, which means that we can do things like. Instead of the Wall-E video that Norm did with Mike McMasters would have been something that we maybe didn't spend as much time editing or producing or drive 4 hours out of the way to go shoot, except for we knew that YouTube was into it and it was going to get guaranteed promotion. So it makes it a little easier for us to take chances on
Yeah, and that got picked up in a bunch of places. I saw that on MSNBC and local news. Yeah,
and it worked out. So we saved some of our Comic-Con stuff for that. We did that Wally video, obviously, on the way down to Comic-Con. We have Adam's Akbar cave video, like the making of the Akbar costume, and the Akbar Adam Incognito, where he walked around. And did you see the Akbar mask? It was amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I mean, Norm did a wonderful job taking pictures of it. I think it looks better in video than, like, when you see it actually moving, it sells a whole different thing. It's not articulated.
Okay.
Yeah, he couldn't get the mouth moving.
Yeah, he didn't have time to get the mouth moving. But that stuff is coming up this week.
Tomorrow.
It's Friday. And then we have some more stuff from that trip. We went to a prop store and all sorts of other cool stuff that'll be up.
I wonder
if the
guy who did the voice for Admiral Akbar is still around, because that would be awesome.
Who did the voice for Akbar? It's somebody famous.
Is it?
Hold on. Eric Bowersfield. Nobody famous.
And I wonder how much post-processing they may have done, or if in fact he can just do it like in camera and just do that voice. Because that would be the best. I love the Admiral Akbar voice. I've always tried to do it, but I've never really got it down.
I bet he can just do it.
You know, it's that kind of, it's like guttural quality.
It's like
his Newcomb voice.
You know, what's his name? Who is the voice of Duke Nukem?
John.
Yeah, it's very iconic.
Admiral Akbar is my favorite minor character in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, we talked about non-human characters on Still Entitled this week, and like Chewbacca and Akbar are real high on the non-human character
Akbar's
list.
Akbar's the best. I'm sure there's a lot of expand. I should check it out. I'd like to know
more about
Akbar.
He was captured.
Akbar.
Yeah, there's a lot of expand.
He's a badass. Yeah, he designed the Mon Calamari flagship.
Yes. He was a prisoner and then freed. And
he's like, you don't take him seriously because he looks like a fish, but he's a fucking badass.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of badass.
You don't become
excellence.
An admiral without being a badass.
That's right. Or it could have been a diversity thing. Like, you know, we kind of need to like promote some more fish people up through the chain.
I feel like
Admiral Akbar is not really the best candidate, but we need to increase our fish diversity numbers.
Let's not talk about.
I'm not getting into your galactic politics here, but
there's more diversity in the Star Wars universe though than there is in Star Trek, which is weird when you think about it.
In races, you mean?
Yeah, they have a black general.
Budget.
They have a fish admiral. Can't say that in Star Trek.
I feel like
Captain Sisko?
Not a general, not an admiral.
He ended up being an admiral.
He was the emissary.
Did he?
No, that's a religious
person. I don't think Sisko was ever promoted to admiral, was he?
I feel like after DS9, he ended up being an admiral. Showed up in Voyager.
I've said before, and I'm not going to get into it now, but Star Trek is racist.
Well, Star Wars, the Empire is racist.
Star Wars, however, is a paragon of diversity.
Okay, so let's talk about the Shark Week thing because it's real dumb.
Yeah,
it's Shark Week.
Well, I don't think it's dumb that there's a controversy.
Discovery did is super dumb. They put a documentary about the Megalodon.
Well, air quotes are very appropriate.
Air quotes are super appropriate here.
Yeah.
The Megalodon, which is a prehistoric giant shark that is known to be extinct.
Yes.
And made a documentary that implies strongly that it is still alive today and just waiting to be found. So it's like a faux documentary weird thing. And they led Shark Week with this.
Yes.
And people are dumb and they don't realize that the Megalodon is actually not currently around.
Right. You could watch this and actually be misinformed. You could come away from a Discovery Channel show now actually being dumber. Because they fooled you into thinking this was a real thing.
It's just like the History Channel stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and look where that's gone.
Yeah.
Well, and this is my biggest problem. I've railed against this before, but I think Discovery, History Learning Channel, whatever you call it, you can't learn anything on these programs anymore. Unless what you want to learn about is did aliens build the pyramids?
The answer is probably no.
And bullshit like that.
The answer... Don't expect history lessons from cable TV.
Didn't one of these channels just do a show about mermaids? They presented that as though it was real.
That was Discovery as well.
What is going on?
Yeah, the whole world's upside down.
It's the opposite of Discovery. That they need to come up with a new name for the channel.
It's not the learning channel. It's the anti-learning channel.
You actually watch it dumber. You will get dumber from watching these programs now.
I
football in the groin.
Sharknado, though, we got that going for us.
Yeah, but again, at least that's up front about what it is.
Oh wait, no, that was on Sci-Fi.
But we're living in a world now where one step from Sharknado being on the Discovery Channel.
I just want to know why the Nashville Network doesn't have country music on anymore.
Doesn't it?
No, because it's Spike TV now.
Well, yeah, because the Nashville Network became TNN.
Yeah, and then that became Spike.
Yeah.
And then
so it's not the Nashville Network
anymore. The Science Fiction Network became the Sci-Fi Network, became the Sci-Fi, S-Y-F-Y
mm-hmm.
Network.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the whole world's upside
down. Why don't you go to country music television? You could, if you want country music, there's go country CMT.
No, but the National Network was about culture, not music.
MTV doesn't have music on it anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Do
you know why MTV doesn't have music on it anymore? It's because they can't afford to get music. They can't afford to play the music on
the
television.
It's weird to me, though, because like when you occasionally do see a music video, like they're clearly still spending, like if you watch like Beyonce's latest, I mean, they spend a lot of money, but then how does anybody watch it?
It's YouTube. Well, people buy it from iTunes.
Yeah.
Like if you really like a music video, you download it from iTunes.
Does anyone do that?
15-year-olds.
I think 15-year-olds are dumb. Right. YouTube is the way now.
YouTube, yeah. Yeah. You know, like there's whole apps that are designed to let you play all the music you want from YouTube. Like you use YouTube as your music truck. So yeah, we're out. That's it. Fake outtakes done. Bye.
Bye.
See you guys next week.